Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, time is short and don't have a lot to say, so let's get to the lovely and talented Bill Fetke right away.
Hold on tight. Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. Gregory DePungles. We have so much going on this past week. It's gone crazy.
Isn't
it
great?
I want to say, first of all, I want to say thank you to the Supreme Court, not because you righted a wrong with Roe v. Wade, but because of your decisions, we have not had to listen to all the global warming alarmists this past week, because all of a sudden they forgot that global warming existed. In their eyes, not ours, but their eyes, and they're so focused on other hate that they have not been, you know, getting on their soapbox about how hot this country has been this past week, you know, past month, and we have not had to listen to it. So it's been a wonderful week not listening to the global warmers.
Well, they're probably on vacation, you know, at the beach, getting the cool weather. They're probably taking it easy. They've forgotten themselves. I don't know. It's interesting, though. It's a great point because Ukraine bumped off COVID. COVID bumped off, you know, all the real news out there for 2 years. Now we've got, you know, the Supreme Court's bumped off Ukraine. It's all a news cycle. It's like, oh, this is the most important thing in the world until the next most important thing in the world is up. And people just go, oh, okay, I guess Ukraine's over. Now we can worry about, you know, something else. But it's fascinating. My comment for the Supreme Court is what took you so long. And my comment for the states is, why the hell did you ever apply a decision that was illegal? So this is what we've been talking about the
Correct.
Last couple of weeks. Yeah.
Correct. So, but, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, obviously Roe v. Wade is taking all the press, but there's a lot of great things that they have done this past couple of weeks that is not,
actually
not
undone.
Getting as much
a lot
press.
Of things they've undone, which is even better.
Well, yeah. Undone, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that they did do was they did vote in favor of a coach who was fired incorrectly for praying after a game at the center of a football field.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, that's very true. Yeah. No. Well, yeah, and it's fascinating.
So that,
that
was great.
It was great, but what always fascinates me is the idea that schools, that this ridiculous idea exists in the left, that anything religious is somehow illegal. You know, anything that anything taxpayer supported that has any connection to a religion is somehow illegal. You know, and they talk about, well, that's establishing religion. Well, I got news for you folks. You know, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, a bunch of things were established long before the Constitution, long before the Bill of Rights. So, you know, you want to talk about establishing stuff. Yeah, you're wrong. It's just that simple. Anyway,
correct.
Go ahead, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. So then they also undid the New York gun law, saying that it was too strict. So they undid that. So, yep. I mean, the left is just like, their brains are just melted. I mean, you can just see their brain, what's left of their brain decay just oozing through their eyes right now, and it's coming out as tears. I mean, they just don't know what has just happened to their world, which is unbelievable.
Well, they're discovering the Constitution,
the other thing that,
which is a strange document for them. And Bianchi's on the line, too, so he may jump in at any time. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, sir.
And so, also what they did was that you have they actually reversed some doctors got I think it was just fined. I'm not positive exactly. I don't think they got their license taken away, but I think they were suspended or something for wrongly prescribing pain medication to a couple patients. The Board of Medicine said that it was indeed necessary. The doctors thought it was. It got all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court actually voted in favor of the two doctors, which is kind of groundbreaking in itself. Now, I can't go into the details. I don't know what the details are, but you know, this will kind of open up a whole bunch of can of worms, because there's been a lot of doctors lately who have been arrested and who are currently in jail for basically peddling pain medication. You know, and pain is the hardest thing for a doctor to diagnose. How do you, you know, as a patient, how do you explain I'm in pain? You could just say this hurts.
Doctor,
well, how's a doctor
I'm in pain.
To know?
That's how I do it.
Well, yeah, okay.
But I have a really high pain tolerance, though. Apparently, I discovered, you know, through my open heart surgery experience, that my pain tolerance is ridiculously high. From my breaking an ankle in two places, hand gliding, I also found out that what I thought was just, you know, a bad sprain. You know, doc says, "It's amazing. You've broken you've got two spiral fractures." Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah, it did hurt a bit. You know, so apparently, it's relative.
I've
but the COVID
had
doctors,
a high pain threshold too.
Yeah, I want to look. Well,
but,
you're a professional wrestler, that makes sense.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So you want to go into the, and now we're going to talk about this COVID thing, because there's a law that's I don't know where it stands right now, to be honest with you. It popped up on my thread a couple weeks ago, so I think it's still working through the process. But they're trying to ban doctors from speaking about drugs that are not, and treatments that
are
not
done.
Approved.
That's been done. Listen
it
to our doctor's panel on Thursdays.
Okay.
No, that's been done ever since COVID came out. So you're talking February, March of 2020. In fact, that's one of the biggest things that's the reason I have Dr. Mikovits, Dr. Ardis, Dr. Thorpe, Dr. Marble, Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard. No, just kidding. But the reason I have the world's greatest doctors plus John Cullen. And we got a surprise
Dr.
guest.
Detroit?
We might even have two surprise guests. I'm not going to say who yet, but we got some wild things in the works. You're not going to believe it. But anyway, the point is that the reason these doctors are on the show is because they've been banned. They've been kicked out.
This thing is going to go to the Supreme Court also.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, though. Like, let's take Dr. Ben Marble. Okay, Dr. Ben Marble created MyFreeDoctor.com. He's cured over 250,000 people of COVID. He hasn't lost anybody. You know, and so he's banned, and he's kicked out of hospitals, and he can't do all kinds of things. So he started MyFreeDoctor.com. You know, and so these are the folks, Dr. Mikovits, you know, she can't just walk into a lab and work anymore. You know, she's the one that exposed Dr. Fascist. You know, so all these folks, Brian Artis is the one that Dr. Artis discovered the snake oil, literally snake venom, you know, in the COVID shots. And, of course, we're still working on the nanotechnology and other things. So most of the doctors that are able to cure people have been kicked out of medicine or reduced or threatened, or there's a gag order on all of them. You know, that's why you don't hear a contrary point of view to Dr. Fascist and the Remdesivir ventilator death march. You know, the reason that he's able to kill a million people, and they were killed by government policy, not COVID. Let's get it straight, okay? So the reason he was able to do that was because he had the force of government behind him and the guns and the restrictions and the financial stuff and the IRS and everything else and the licensing boards to be able to stop the doctors who are curing people so they could advance the doctors who are killing people. And I stand by that. You know, Dr. Fascist, you want to knock on my door? Well, not my door, but, you know, call the show. You know, I'll take you on. But this is what's going on out there. You know, and anybody that's with Dr. Carrie Madej, M-A-D-E-J, we're going to talk about her on Thursday also. She almost died in a small plane crash. You know, and Pianki knows about this plane, too. It's a Piper Comanche, PA-24. Well, I'm just watching all her videos. No wonder they went after her. She's telling the truth. You know, so any doctor that has a belief in God, that is independent, that isn't towing the government fascist, you know, Dr. Fascist, Dr. Goebbels, Dr. Mengele line, is being kicked out of medicine. It's like weeding out the military people who are the leaders, the ones that won't take the jab. And now did you hear this in the news? That they just said that the militaries, they're not taking high school diplomas anymore. You can get in without one. Well, now you've got the zombie apocalypse troops. Great. They haven't even studied the Constitution yet. Not even the minimal amount that they get in high school. These people don't even have civics yet, and yet they're going to be sworn into the military. So there's some news for you.
Yeah, I read about that last night. I found that kind of interesting. I'm not surprised by it by any stretch of imagination, because the enlistment rate has gone way, way down to the point where, they're offering bonuses higher than what nurses or doctors get these days.
Yeah.
And,
well,
I mean, you know,
stop mandating the jab.
Curve.
You know, stop manning the jab, and you won't have recruitment problems. That's why they have recruitment problems.
Well, the recruitment problems have been going on for years, and it started before COVID. COVID just made it twice as bad. But they've had
wait a minute,
years. About
Trump
that.
Years. Now, let's talk about the Trump years. I mean, this country was feeling great about itself. You can't tell me recruitment was down in 2017, 2018, or even 2019.
It was. It was down, and they were still offering major bonuses to enlistment. Even
offers
to enlistment
the Trump
people,
years.
They're offering $15,000 to $20,000. One of my coworkers' sons got a $20,000 bonus for enlisting in the Navy. Because
did he get free college
enlisted,
too?
Not an officer.
Wow. Did he get free college?
Enlisted.
Yeah, did he get free college too and things like that?
Actually, he's actually out of – he left the Navy. Now he's back – he's going back to college right now.
Yeah. So it's interesting that anybody that complains about student loans, you know, the military was offering a great way to go to not only tuition-free but to get paid. So I don't hear anybody complaining
correct.
And griping that they took out student loans when they could have served in the military and gotten a free education for simply serving our country for a few years. And then you get veterans' health benefits the rest of your life. Had I known all that, I might have done it myself, but I had other plans. I figured I'd be in the airlines by the time I was like 21, 22. That didn't exactly work out. Anyway, Pianki, do you want to get in on this?
Well,
hold on. I want to double check.
I'm going
to let you get going.
Before I switch, I switch subjects.
Okay. Pianki?
Well, I was happy to see that the court struck down these gerrymandering maps in Louisiana and Alabama. You know, there's some particular reason that they believe that all blacks live, wants to stay together, congregated together. So when doing that, if you get enough of a population of blacks in an area, then what happens is they want to say that they divide them up per what you would expect would go toward an equal one representative, and they're saying that blacks should have three. But the thing is that blacks don't all live congregated together like that.
And, how about that? Well, the racist Democrats
don't
know that
yet. Well, actually, I disagree with you on that one. Well, at least here in Escambia County, we have one county commissioner in District 3, and District 3 was gerrymandered, and it outlined a black, heavily black area. Now, obviously, it's not 100% black, and not every single black person in Escambia County lives there, but 70% of all the black people do live there, and they cut it out specifically to gerrymander to make sure that they had at least one commissioner up on the dais every single election, and so that they always had at least one person with their voice. You know, here in Florida, Ron DeSantis tried to stop that. In Jacksonville, where there was a gerrymandered district, and he used the law to say, sorry, we're not allowed to gerrymander in Florida, so we're going to cut it. So this is my proposal to cut it up. Now, it went to the courts. The court said, no, you broke up a black district, historically black district. And so then he ended up redoing it a little bit. And so they basically got their district back. But it happens all the time, and the courts hold it up, which I disagree with. I understand the premise of it, but that's still not a reason to, you know, if gerrymandering is illegal on one end, it's got to be illegal on the other side, too.
Well, what's happening is that you got these politicians, these black politicians. And I'm going to tell you how it plays out. We had a mayor in the city of St. Louis, and he was Clarence Harmon. He was black. He used to be a police chief, and actually he was a conservative personage. The literature, the pamphlets that he put out in North St. Louis, he showed his face on it. The ones he put out in South St. Louis was predominantly white. He didn't show his face on it. Then when the time comes for a bipartisan committee to draw the maps, and just take we got a street, and you got blacks stay on either side of the street. It seemed like, and almost it was intentionally, that they would go down and they would include this house address, this house, this house. Then they cut across the street, go down and include this house address, and this house address. Then go back down the street and jump across. So what they was doing is trying to encompass this black household and put them in that district, whereas the map looked like a snake or even a worm.
Right.
And that is totally wrong. If those people, I'm sure, wanted to live on one side of the street, they would have tried to buy houses on one side of the street.
No, you're absolutely correct. And here in Florida, we have Val Demings, who's a former police chief, a woman police chief out of Orlando. She's running for Senate against Marco Rubio right now. And, you know, and so the whole time during all this Black Lives Matter garbage, she was all about defund the police. She praised the Minnesota City Council for defunding. She praised all their ideas. Well, now she's getting hammered on this. And so what she has done is, instead of becoming this, you know, defund the police person, she has gone back and all of her ads now say Chief Val Demings, and she's wearing her her police chief uniform in all of her campaign ads. You know, it kind of goes to your point, Bianchi, where we just have they just live by a double standard. They want their cake and eat it too, and you know, and it's about time that Republicans are starting to fight back and throw everything right back in their face and making them eat their own words. And that's exactly what Marco Rubio has done, and he's done a great job of it too. He has been hammering her to the point where she's been forced to go ahead and kind of submit to the defund the police idea and started supporting police again. You know, and we know it's all a lie, but you know, but that's what do. It's all one big lie.
That's why I say here on this show all the time that conservatives got to get up off their butt and fight back and throw boomerang. If they throw it, make it a boomerang, make it come right back at them. And that's what you have to do. If a black person calls you a racist, call them a racist back. You know, in St. Louis County, there was a community out there called Florissant. Yeah. Florissant used to be majority white. But now it's the seventh, what they call elite in some standings. You know, you look at it, look for it on YouTube. It's the seventh most elite black community in the United States. That's because blacks that was in Ferguson moved out to Florissant, and some further moved out further west across the Missouri River into St. Charles County, which is predominantly white, 95%. And guess what the police departments are? They are nearly all white. So they couldn't have been running from a white police officer because they just ran to a district that has majority whites in their police department. And that's what they chose
Correct.
To do.
And most black people who do have money usually feel safer in a white neighborhood. I mean, those are just facts. Now, they may feel uncomfortable at first.
Is it a white neighborhood or two different things? Is it a white neighborhood or is it an upper middle class neighborhood? We've talked about this before middle and upper middle class black families aren't different than white families. It's not a color thing, it's an income thing. It's an income thing, not a color thing.
If I come over to either one of you guys' houses and I'm hungry, I'm going to your refrigerator and fix me something to eat. I don't care what you say, I'm hungry. And I'm going to sit down and eat it. I'm not going to drink your beer because I don't drink beer. But if you got lemonade in there, uh-oh, you better look out.
Okay, and your point is? Where are we going with this, Jackie?
I feel comfortable. And you know, when you talk about the upper and middle, then that goes back to another problem, is your education system, especially your schools in urban areas. They are not doing the job that you're supposed to.
They're doing exactly what they're supposed to. Bianchi, their job is to keep the black population of this country undereducated. Their job in public housing is to keep people miserable. Their job is to perpetuate a victim class among black Americans so they'll vote Democrat, where the Democrats never give anything that they promise to perpetuate, you know, and say, it's like the Republicans saying, well, we'll get them next time. It's the same thing. They're doing exactly what they're supposed to do, they think. But I want to get back to one thing that we talked about earlier.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're not educated, how are they ever going to command high wage and salary jobs that put them in those classes where when they go to buy a home, they want to buy a home in an established neighborhood where it's going to appreciate somewhat in value.
Yeah. See, I think it's more income-based in this country. If you take an upper or middle class or an upper middle class neighborhood, you're going to have black families, white families, Asian families. You're going to have Christians, Jews, you know, Buddhists. You're going to have all these different folks there. It's really income that I think people have far more in common with, you know, and profession than they have, you know, you maybe have more blue collar areas, you maybe have more white collar areas, but I think that's much more of a unifying factor than race. I think most people have gotten beyond race. The government hasn't, and the left haven't, because they pride themselves on it. That's part of their whole reason for existing. But I think if you talk to most people, the reason black families want to get out of urban areas is because they're controlled by Democrats. They're horrible places to live. The schools suck. The public housing sucks for those that have to be in it. It's all by design to maintain the status quo of the you know, the black plantation, the Democrat black plantation, and the families that want to get out of that can't. Because of the education, because of everything else. I mean, why else would Democrats mandate that you don't have any choice, that you have to go to the worst possible school that they could design? Well, it's got to be on purpose. They don't want black families in middle-class neighborhoods with white families and Asian families and, you know, Jewish families, Christian, Buddhist, and everything else, and African and Nigerian families, you know, and the Egyptian families and anybody else, Turkish families, anybody that's prosperous, you know, around the world coming here, Central American families, you know, that immigrated here, you know, the right way. They don't want to see those neighborhoods. You know, they want demonizing white neighborhoods.
No, they can't. They can't have people get along is what the problem is. But I do want to switch subjects here because Florida had a great week. Ron DeSantis signed a bunch of bills. He vetoed a bunch of bills.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into that, you know, the left media is doing anything they can possibly to build up Charlie Crist. He's running for governor against Ron DeSantis. I mean, the guy's on life support right now, but their big thing that the only thing that they could talk about with him is that he got $100,000 over the weekend. That was their claim to fame for Charlie Crist, and they're pushing that hard. He got $100,000 in one weekend. Ron DeSantis, the first half of June, collected $3.6 million.
I'm not worried about Charlie Crist. Is Crist a Democrat or a Republican this week? I keep forgetting. What is he this week?
Yeah, this week he's a Democrat.
Okay.
But just to give you an idea, Ron DeSantis, out of his own, he's got $7.4 million in the bank right now. His PAC has $107 million.
Obviously, Bill.
Bill.
That's the run for that's the presidential campaign fund in 2028. Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I steal your? I thought I was interpreting your wisdom and carrying it further.
I
wasn't.
Well, you interrupted me.
I'm sorry. I do that. It's a host thing. Go ahead. You can state it now. And everybody forget that I said anything. This is Bill's wisdom. Go ahead, Bill.
So, anyways, so the other Democrat candidate, Nikki Fried. Some really bad news came out with her this week. This is no surprise to us here at Action Radio, but we've been saying this all along. Mm-hmm. But it has come out that she has denied more concealed carry permits than her two previous predecessors combined.
Mm-hmm.
So no one's really surprised by that. I don't think that's going to hurt her even worse. She's just a single.
Yeah, but how does she
right
do that?
Now.
We're a shall issue state. She doesn't have any power to do that. If people meet the criteria, they get the permit. What is she doing?
Well, some of it was stalling.
Okay.
And, you know, especially during COVID, she was blaming COVID for a lot of it. And a lot of it was just being denied without reason. So there's a lot of shady stuff with her going on. But, you know, let's get to the good news here. So Ron DeSantis signed the Stop Woke Act.
Right.
That basically doesn't, that's the CRT and, you know, all that great stuff. The left and the school districts sued him. You know, the teachers union sued him, saying that this is wrong. It's a protection of freedom of speech. The Supreme Court here in Florida said, no, there's no intent to injure. There's nothing wrong with this law. So this law is going to affect CRT will not be in our schools, thank goodness. So that is good. The one law that I always laugh at, because the city of Pensacola has had this law for years, but now it's a state law.
Uh-oh.
And that is if your music is too loud in your car, if someone can hear it 25 feet away from your car, you will get a fine of $114. I laugh at this.
What, is that the decibel level or something, or what? Is that the decibel level to hear a car sound 25 feet away, or what? 114?
No, it's music. It's music. You can't have music blaring. You're
missing my point, though. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I know, but but if you go down to downtown Pensacola, go downtown any town, and all you hear is bass just thumping, thumping, thumping. Cops never pull you over for it. But this is...
Well, they shouldn't.
I like
it's
this
funny.
Law to certain, yeah.
You know.
Well, it is funny, but what this is that this is a targeting law, is the way I look at this.
Oh.
And I think it's kind of like a stop and frisk type of law, is the way I look at this. This kind
this
of
is called stop and listen,
police,
or what?
Police.
This is a stop and listen law.
This is more one of those laws that it's like, okay, you see someone that maybe looks a little shady, you know, playing their music loud, so this gives a cop opportunity to pull you over and accidentally smell something that they don't actually smell. I'm not crazy about this law. I'll put it that way.
No,
it's
I think it's
one
stupid.
Of the ones I think that.
Well, there
is
disturbing the peace, and there is nuisance laws and things like that. I thought you were going to talk about playing guitar in your home, which I tend to do rather loudly.
No,
just because it's fun.
No.
But the car thing, the car is like your home. Isn't there some statute or some provision in law that a person inside their car is like a person inside their home? Aren't they equated somehow?
It's protected under the Fourth Amendment.
Okay. Well,
but
I know that,
again,
but just the,
yeah,
you know, when
but
we
the
say,
war, the war on drugs
but in law,
precedes it, though. Yeah.
Wait a minute, but isn't a car considered a home? You know, sort of a protected environment?
I'm not sure about Florida, but like in Alabama, for example, mm-hmm. if you're sitting on your front porch, which is still considered your, or if you're standing at your front window and mm-hmm. you see your neighbor across the street, and you give him the middle finger or you moon him, something like that, he could actually sue you. And according to Alabama law, it's not freedom of speech inside your own home because he was offended and you exposed yourself, for example. There are restrictions to everything. This music thing is just ridiculous. I look at this as more of a targeting type of thing. But I only have a few minutes left, so let's go on to the next one. Ron DeSantis did sign in the bill saying that churches are exempt from any future lockdowns.
They always were.
We do have another...
the First Amendment guaranteed that, but the churches didn't fight it. See, this is a case where you shouldn't have to make a stupid law because the churches didn't exercise their fundamental freedoms. They did. So, in other words, you've got a statutory law subordinate to the First Amendment, right? And yet the churches wouldn't exercise their First Amendment rights, which are supreme to the lockdowns. So why do you need the law? This is
correct.
This is crazy. It's like you need permission to do what you already have a right to do. That makes no sense.
I think it's one of these campaign laws is what I call
it.
A law just to kind of boost your campaign more or less. But he did turn down the alimony bill, which.
Wait a minute. Does this include a punishment for government officials that try to lock down churches?
No. Obviously they would because it's illegal to begin with. So. Anything that a government official tries to do,
necessarily.
They would not be able to do.
Not necessarily. It may just be illegal to do it, but if they don't have a punishment or a penalty, like jail and fines for government officials that even try to lock down churches?
Well, just the government official is just going to look like an ass is what he'll look like, but it'll turn into – it's just a political thing is all it is, and no matter how you look at it. But the next thing he did was he turned down the alimony bill. This is the third time that this bill has failed.
Tell me about it.
The South Florida Republicans keep trying to push this through. This alimony bill basically puts a limit on how long someone can pay alimony, which sounds good on the surface. And I do agree with that. The problem is it's a black and white bill. Either you pay 5 years alimony, for example, you either pay 5 years alimony or you don't pay at all. There's no provisions in it for someone who was married for 50 years or 40 years, they're 63 years old, she was always a stay-at-home mom, and now all of a sudden the husband decides to divorce her, and she's 2 years away from Medicaid or Medicare, for example. It doesn't take into consideration how long they've been married. It doesn't take into consideration, if there's a disabled child involved.
That most women work? alimony is an outdated concept. I mean, it used to be that men that paid for were women who spent their whole life, you know, raising kids and taking care of the husband. So what it really is the husband was allowed to make money because the husband didn't have to do what us single guys do, you know, cook, clean, shop, you know, do laundry, all the things that we have to do, you know. And so the alimony made sense in that world. It doesn't make sense in this world.
Well, it does to a certain extent, but this bill was bad because it didn't allow the judge to make a decision or a jury to make a decision on how long it should be. It was just a flat rate period that took nothing in consideration. And there's been a couple bills here lately that are taking away our day in court. And these are kind of underlying dangerous bills that don't allow you know, us to have our day in court, that it requires these ELCs to go right to a mediator, or it's just a set, you know, it's just a set dollar amount, or, you know, no matter what. And not every case is exactly the same, and so therefore that's why you need a judge to do this hearing to make a decision on how long something should last for. And that was really the basis why he denied it and why we were fighting to deny it also. Another thing he vetoed was that a law was passed in the House and Senate for businesses, for businesses to be allowed to sue government. And this is basically has to do with the COVID lockdowns, where businesses lost a lot of money because government passed unjust rules that caused these people to lose business and lose money and sometimes lose their livelihood. He vetoed this bill mostly because, you know, how do you determine how a business loses money? Was it bad management that just happened to coincide with COVID, for example? I mean, we lost money during COVID, but we stayed alive, and we figured out a way to stay alive during COVID. So he did veto that bill because it was just more, you know, he just felt there's too much litigation involved. The Markle Act.
I'm going to get you
passed.
To sum up a little bit because we've got Lindsay, and I'm just
yes,
checking.
Yes, I know, because we're done here. I only got a couple more here. So the Markle Act will give grandparents the rights to visitation rights, which I think is great. He did allow local governments are now allowed to determine if smoking is allowed on the beach.
What?
And local governments will make the decision if smoking is allowed on the on beaches.
Oh, okay.
So he kind of reversed the government. The state government is the one who used to make that decision, but he's now saying the local governments can make their own decisions. And the last one, and this is the great one too, it is now a felony to buy, sell, or steal sex pics or videos. For example, if you took a picture of your girlfriend naked, and I took your phone and sent that picture out to the whole world, it is now a felony. And I'll
ooh, you cut out just for a second.
Yeah.
So this is some decent internet protection. Now, how about if the boyfriend does it?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be someone who's got the boyfriend's phone. You know, it just anybody that sends out anything on the internet. Of course, the biggest thing is, folks, don't let your picture be taken naked. Okay. I mean, just don't do it. You know, don't be taken with a drink in your hand. Don't be taken with a you know, all kinds of other things. All right. So let me.
So I know I have to wrap it up. So I'm going to go earn my dollar for today. Oh, the last thing though is that DeSantis did sign the bill that prohibits local governments from paying ransomware. So you know, and that's been kind of a big thing lately too. So there's no longer you can no longer pay ransomware people who hijack your city or state government websites and stuff like that. So you can no longer pay them. Which should be makes things a little bit on the little interesting side going forward, but it'll turn these governments to be a little bit more proactive as far as cybersecurity. But I'm going to go to my dollar for today. You guys have a good rest of the show.
Sounds good. Thank you, Bill. All right, let's. I don't have her theme yet. In fact, we're actually kind of in a transition here. Lindsay and I have been talking about possibly getting our wellness focus together because we had I had a fabulous discussion yesterday with Paige Ward. And, of course, I never got Lindsay Horton and we got Chancey Terry. And so I'm thinking, just kind of thinking of putting them all together, you know, somehow, some way. So we're working on that right now. So Bill is on his way. Pianki is still here. Lindsay, I'm still working on Wendy. You might have a few extra minutes, but I'm not sure yet. So we'll see how it goes. If she can't join us, then we can chat a little bit. And I have a rather interesting article on bill writing, which I found last night, which is kind of fun too. All right. So Lindsay, what's going on? What did you think of our chat yesterday? What's happening in wellness? The floor is yours.
Good morning. Please let me know, as usual, if I start going in and out so I can relocate myself. Man, I have just noticed over the last week how heavy just the air has been, just people's attitudes, people's words, just people's point of view. It's so cut and dry. And I'll be honest with you, some of it's just kind of rude and a little bit ignorant sometimes. So today I wanted to talk about maybe some ways that we could keep a positive state of mind, at least within ourselves and around us, see if maybe we can help switch this a little bit back up into that higher frequency. Because let me tell you something right now, what I have been reading and seeing online has just been atrocious. I don't know if you have seen the divide that's come from all this stuff that's been on the news lately, but
oh, yeah.
The world is just heavy. It's very
negative. I do a new show. We talked about that yesterday with Paige. There's some folks, and I forgot who, it may have even been you, that said, stop watching the news. It's only going to depress you. I watch it because many times it amuses me. Not the tragedies, but just the way things are reported, the things that are not reported, the whole psychology of news, the conformists, the lack of any integrity in journalism, you know, the fact that the best reporters aren't even on the news, you know, things like that. So it's quite a fascination. That's all you see is news. You know, if you lock yourself in your room, if you isolate and all you do is watch news, you're going to think the world is a terrible place. You know, get out, smell the jasmine, you know, go for the bike ride. Ride with the bunnies.
They're the media right now has such a strong argument on both sides of everything majorly that's going on right now that it's so confusing for people who, you know, they have those rose-colored glasses on and they're still just trusting everything that comes over their ears. And now they're starting to realize, this station said this and this station said this, and I trust both of them. So now I'm at this point where I don't really know what to believe, so I'm just going to start spewing things out and just hope for the best here. One of the things which I don't think people would expect me to want to hit on is the Roe versus Wade. And is it okay if I say something shortly on that?
You can say anything you want. I talk about the show as the ultimate free speech zone. You can say anything as long as you don't. The only things I can't allow, I can't have threats of violence, and I can't have, you know, just overt, really horrible, disgusting personal attacks or giving out personal information. Short of that, you can say anything you want.
Okay. Well, the only thing that I want to say on this is I've been receiving a lot of spiritual warfare on this situation, particularly because I am a female. And it has gotten so out of hand in my eyes. I'm sitting here and I've seen people say, if I have the right to choose my genitalia, then I should have the right to have an opinion. And then the women come back and say, you're not a man, you don't have a uterus, you don't have an opinion. And then you have men who are like, well, what if a woman has been, you know what, I sleep with a woman and that woman decides to go and abort that child, but I wanted that child and my hands are now tied. And this woman came on and said, that's none of your business. You need to leave it alone. And the man tried to stand up for himself. He was like, no, he said, that's not okay. I want to be a dad. Just because it was a boy and not a girl, she aborted my child. That's not right. So at that point, I was
kidding. You are touching on a hugely important point, and I'm so glad to hear you do this. So we're going to take our time with this. I want to spend a few minutes. I have been advocating this for years as far back as the 80s, when I started getting involved in the men's movement and men's rights and things like that, and it occurred to me very quickly that after Roe v. Wade, you know, that the rights of men were sacrificed horribly. The idea that a woman and a doctor can make a decision for a man and a baby, you know, I call it pro-choice times three. Okay. And I've written articles on this. I've talked about it. And in fact, I had some, if you go through my Facebook, you know, if you're a Facebook friend, you'll see some amazing folks, some amazing women that came forward and said, yes, I know women who purposely slept with guys, lied to them about birth control, got pregnant. Or they'll say, I know men that purposely slept with, you know, three or four women to get as many babies as possible. There are horrible people out there. Okay. There are horrible
yes,
people doing horrible things.
Disgusting.
But here's where it gets interesting, though. If you believe in equal rights, okay, and it's funny that the same people are saying my body, my choice, you know, are also demanding that you get a vaccine. That's a whole separate issue. But what it comes down to is my theory is that pro-choice, this is why I don't know if you're familiar with our bill that we wrote here on abortion that I consulted with a whole bunch of conservative women to talk about. We actually split the illegal, well, not illegal, but an abortion into two separate events. One, the termination of the pregnancy, but that's contingent on saving the baby. Okay, so if you want to terminate, one wants to terminate her pregnancy, she wants to get out of it and give up all parental rights, then okay, but, you know, the condition is you have to be able to save the life of the baby, and of course then the father gets full parental rights. And if he doesn't want the child, mm-hmm. then we're talking adoption, you know, other things like that. But what is fascinating is that the same women that absolutely yell and scream, my body, my choice, are perfectly happy killing a baby, taking their life, and are perfectly happy taking the life and livelihood from the father, giving the men no choice. So if and this
right.
is blatantly unconstitutional. This is unconstitutional, by the way. Okay, the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution says that all laws apply equally. Now, men and women are biologically different. We know that, but a child is biologically half the father, half the mother. Okay, so the idea that the mother can decide for the father, the mother can decide for the baby, the mother can either deny a father his child in an abortion if he wants that baby, or can what's the other side of this? You know, or force a man to pay for child support, whereas if he were a woman, he might choose to give up his parental rights. So there's a huge inequity, inequality here between men and women. And actually, one of the things I was thinking, and I put this, like I said, I got a huge Facebook post on this, but as this goes through the courts and as this goes through the law, I think men are going to benefit as much from Roe v. Wade as the children that will be born. Because all of a sudden, wait a minute, without Roe v. Wade, you don't have that automatic connection that an abortion means the death of a baby. You know, you don't have that automatic connection that women can control everybody else's life. Anyway, go ahead, Pianki, and then we'll get to Lindsay.
Yeah, the thing is that those arguments can go on if they want to. But as Clarence Thomas said, the Supreme Court had no business legalizing, pretending to legalize,
percentage is right. Yep. Exactly.
They have no authority to do that. That's what was changed. You can continue to have those arguments if you want to. The 1849 Wisconsin, I say 1849 law mm-hmm. against abortion, you can change that if you want to. But the Supreme Court at the federal level has no business getting involved in abortion. They had no business getting involved in same-sex marriage. And they have no business getting involved in interracial marriages.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I want to get back to Lindsay's point because she makes a really good one. That as a woman, you know, you're being pressured that why aren't you for Roe v. Wade? Why aren't you pro-abortion? Why aren't you in the same way that black conservatives are being pressured? Why aren't you a Democrat? Why don't you do like other black people do like you're supposed to? You know, I see a huge parallel here.
Parallel there. And the problem is if you are not, listen to me right now, if you do not know where you stand in this world and you are not read up and you do not know what's going on, you can get yourself in a really bad situation, a really bad conversation really quick, and you can get yourself started down a wrong path. And what's really frustrating me here is everybody wants to call this baby before a certain point in time a clump of cells. Well, let me tell you something. In the Bible, do you know the first person that recognized Jesus? That was John. And that was John inside that mother's womb. The first person that ever was taken over by the Holy Spirit within the mother's womb was John. Okay? He felt Jesus in Mary's womb. He reacted to that. So for you to sit here and tell me that that's just a clump of cells, no. Come up with a better argument, all right?
Well, let me put that in historical context because you're raising another brilliant point. Okay, so for those of us that are older, before ultrasound, okay, ultrasound changed everything. I don't think people realize how much medical technology has changed. In the world of 1973, when I was a young teenager, okay, and I was raised in a socialist, absolutely pro-choice, radical feminist family. I mean, I had parents that marched for abortion. I mean, that's what they did. And the lie was that an abortion is only a clump of cells. It's not a human being. And they did that because the Catholic Church at the time was actually publishing pictures of abortions, of what babies look like. And, of course, the theory was then, well, that's just a lie. Those people are insane. They don't want women to have a choice. They don't want, they want men to be able to tell women what to do. And, of course, I'm young and impressionable. I'm thinking about all this stuff. And then eventually what happens is, you know, a couple of things change. One, I had a daughter, you know, of course. And I think any parent who's absolutely pro-choice, I think you've got a problem. We can talk about that too.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was, that's the thing back then, that before we had the medical technology, you know, the clump of cell theory, people were, I think, pro-abortion or pro-choice because they didn't think they were doing anything to a real human being. They didn't think they were doing something that was going to cause a human being pain. And that was the lie. And that's
I think that's how
abortion was perpetuated, that people were pro-choice thinking, okay, well, it's not really a human being yet. We're talking about a clump of cells. You know, we've seen cells in biology. We know what cells look like under a microscope. I don't think anybody had any idea how fast a human develops. And I think
that's the power of knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. But you understand that we didn't have ultrasound. We didn't know what babies look like at 5 weeks, 10 weeks, 15 weeks, 20 weeks. Nobody knew. So what happened was ultrasound changed everything.
Stand up on that same narrative.
Right. But you can't say that now. You can't say now that it's just a clump of cells. But I want to put it in historical context for a lot of people. I mean, I was pro-choice way back when because it made sense. I'm not, this is not a human being. We're talking about 10, 15, 20 cells getting together. Okay, they haven't developed yet. No big deal. Okay. That's how they were
actually. Not a human being.
That's what people were thinking.
Well, what about the guy? What about the guy in prison who shot the mother? He would have got 20 years, but he got 40 because he killed the baby too in the womb.
Well, that's one of the great inconsistencies. Yeah, exactly. But that was the lie at the time. Okay. Now I understand why people felt that way. Just like people in Nazi Germany didn't know that Jews were being exterminated. Okay. It's mm-hmm. hard to hold somebody responsible when they had no clue. After they knew. Okay. Now it's a different story. Okay. So here's where we are now. After people know, and I'm not sure. Do you know when ultrasounds came out? Do you know when the medical technology started changing? It's been at least 20 years now.
It was after the 80s, right?
Yeah. Maybe 90s ultrasounds got big.
After the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 100% after the 80s.
Okay, so let's say 1990. Let's just put a benchmark in here because I don't have the medical knowledge. So previous to 1990, if you didn't know, if you were told the lie, I understand why you believe that, okay? After 1990, when the ultrasound started coming out, okay, and people started looking at them and going, wait a minute, I think I've been lied to. And so what happened in this country, and I don't think this has really been talked about, but the ultrasound and other medical technology and the fact that babies are being able to be saved at 20 weeks – and yet the left wants to abort them at 40 weeks? Okay, wait a minute. And this is why it's changing opinions all across the country.
Well, not only that, you can choose to have an abortion in a snap of a finger, Greg. Literally, if I got pregnant right now, I could drive an hour and a half away from here, go get two pills, and within 2 weeks, it's like that moment of my life never happened. Nobody's going to sit down and counsel me. Nobody's going to sit down and say, oh, okay, well, your reasoning is good enough. Your reasoning isn't bad enough. Nobody's going to tell me about the Bible and about what I just told you about John feeling Jesus in the womb. And, you know, that's where I want people to understand something. If you have had an abortion, if something like that has happened and you didn't know, or maybe you did, but you didn't realize how serious of an action that was, then you need to repent, first of all, and then forgive yourself for not knowing what you know now, but to know now what you do know now and use that to further educate other people. When it comes down to it, if you get pregnant via rape, if you get pregnant during something horrible, and God forbid that ever happened to anybody listening to this show, but I think it should be the responsibility of the politicians in place in our counties to have a system set up to help us women who do get put in those situations, who are willing to stand up and be like, maybe I didn't lovingly conceive this child, but God gave me this child. It's here for a purpose, and I need help supporting it. I mean, you don't have to make a baby into a stressful situation for a woman. Now, she does also need to be offered help because the trauma and the resentment she could have towards that child is a whole other thing, as you've already touched on. But I also want people to look at the thing of it, the people who are for it, and, you know, they're like my body, my choice, I should be allowed to do this, I should be allowed to do that. Now, I'm not going to sit there and I'm not going to harp my opinion on them because obviously they've been hurt. Obviously people around them have been hurt. And obviously they've somehow been told something that has made so much sense to them that they're just going to fight. They're going to fight as hard as I am on their belief side. Those are the people that we kind of have to look at and be like, interesting. Thank you for your information. I understand I understand where you got your perspective, and you got to leave it at that. They come back at you, you got to be the bigger person and step away from that conflict, because at the end of the day, we know what is right versus what's wrong. I mean, let's just, you know, it is what it is.
getting to the point you made earlier, what are women saying? Are they saying that they feel perfectly comfortable, you know, having an abortion, killing a baby, and taking the right away from the father to either be a parent or to force him to be a parent when he might not want to? Do they feel comfortable taking charge of three people's lives? I mean, how do you rationally do that? I'm just curious.
To be honest with you, I don't think women – I think it's a control thing. I don't think women want to be told, be controlled by anything. I mean, I understand the oppression of it. It's like, you know, in the torturous times where a woman could get held down, and it still happens today. But if you look at the statistics, I don't think a majority of abortions come from a violent situation. And I also think that that needs to be respected, you know, like keep that part and let's be sensitive with that. Let's address it. Let's figure out a way where we can make people comfortable with, you know, a resolution on what would happen in a violent act of sexual abuse. So I think we do have to be aware that that does happen, but that isn't the majority of cases anymore. And that isn't why everybody should be, if people get a medical abortion, I think it should be because that child within the womb no longer has a heartbeat and it has a chance of hurting the mother who's trying to carry it. And
yeah,
at that
sense.
Point, you know, about that is about as far as I get with it. It's like if that child's already lost the heartbeat and it's going to affect mama, then, you know, I
see, that's
think
different.
That
though,
another thing.
The objection is to killing a perfectly healthy baby. I think, you know, I think you're talking about something that would be for the health of the mother, and that makes perfect sense. Yeah, Pianki, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, you know, a woman that's in contemplating on a relationship with a male, she should reveal to the male if she's ever had an abortion, just like a male should reveal to her if he's ever been on the down low. And
yep,
see if we put these
right.
things in place, because women today, you got people that feel that they have been infringed of their right, my body, my choice. But look what happens when you infringe my Second Amendment right.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. Don't you, Greg?
Well, yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, we all have our rights. My thing is, and this is where I talk about the rights in terms of abortion, that no one has the right to control somebody else, okay? You all have your rights. And, of course, the babies can't speak for themselves yet, so we have to protect them, you know, until they can speak. So we do that because we value human life. But a man cannot control a woman, a woman cannot control a man. So given our biological differences, how do we create a situation that preserves the maximum amount of rights so that people can control themselves and make decisions for themselves and not be in a position to control other people? The only problem is, you know, abortion is a mess.
Take walk-in clinics away.
Yeah. Take walk-in clinics away, yeah. See, the problem with abortion, it's the messiest issue out there. There is, you know, we can talk Second Amendment and it's black and white. Okay, we can talk about property rights. We can talk about the economy. We can talk about the national debt. We can talk about virtually any other issue. And I can give you a really good, solid answer. Here's where I stand on this. However, abortion, because it's multiple people involved, you got three people plus families, okay, if they even know about it, you know, plus the medical industry, because the amount of people involved in this and the effect on society and the hugely extreme different points of view and the fact that it's not looked at as a rights issue for everybody involved, it's a mess. There is no clear way through this that you can just say, there's the answer. It doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Way to get back on track here with everything. The whole point of that is that
discussion. Yeah.
if you are out there today and you are on the internet and you're going to see it, I mean, it's all over all of our feeds, and you see these disgusting arguments going on and people just tearing one another apart because of their views and opinions. Mm-hmm. There are ways to take yourself out of that negativity. Don't stay in it. If you're curious, you want to read, see what kind of opinions people have, read a few of them, and then please back out of it, because in the end of it, this has all been a staged thing from the media. They are riling everybody up. They're trying to distract us, divide us, and cause arguments. And let me tell you, they picked a good one to stand on, because babies are a very sensitive topic to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So please, if you start finding yourself getting into this heavy state of mind, this heavy feeling in your chest, oh, I have an opinion, I feel like I need to state this loud and clear right now, just take a deep breath through your nose. We breathe through our nostrils when we're stressed out, because that's where God gave us life. He blew the breath of life in through our nostrils. So we breathe through our nostrils. And just ask yourself, is it really going to have the impact that I think it's going to have in my mind? Because you can walk away. You can rezone your mind. and you can refocus your mind on the day. You don't have to sit there and focus on these arguments about all these laws being put into place and these opinions on everybody. Live your life, keep your nose up, mind your business, know your beliefs, and stay positive, but be aware. So today I just wanted to say a few ways of doing that. So I read all this negative stuff. What am I going to do to keep my mind positive for the rest of the day? I'm going to listen to positive music. That's the number one thing that you're going to do. Listen to upbeat, positive music. It has a positive tone to it, a positive message, positive lyrics. Then I want everybody to start practicing a habit of not speaking negative words. I don't want you saying the word can't. I don't want you to say the word don't, no, nothing. Find a way to make
everything use those words here.
Comes out of your mouth.
This is the whole show's about possibility, so I try to avoid those at all costs, yeah.
Right. So practice speaking positively.
That's
yes.
Positive.
I'm going to get a smoothie.
Now, if you do this, you're going to realize something. You're going to realize after a few days that if you intentionally listen to positive music, read positive things, and think and speak positive thoughts and words, that this heaviness that is surrounding all this low vibration stuff that's going on right now, it's not going to have as much of a stronghold on you. You're going to be able to separate yourself from it, and you're going to be able to find some contentness with your own personal opinion. That way you can breathe for a second. If it does get brought up to you in public, just randomly, you're going to be able to handle it a lot better and have an adult conversation with people. So that's really what I wanted to hit on today, is those three ways to just keep yourself positive, because things are about to get a lot darker than they already are. So y'all need to know some easy ways. A lot of people right now, I mean, this stuff is getting so bad that friends of mine who have been off of antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, knowing me, like I am a spiritual advisor, and they are coming to me saying, listen, I think I need to go to my doctor, and I think I need something. Like, this is just getting too much for me to handle.
Take the blue pill.
You know what I'm saying? And it's getting to that point.
Here's something I've been thinking about. It seems that we just had a big discussion here, and we put a lot of energy into it, and it was quite fascinating. I feel better for having that discussion. I think it's the quality of discussion. I think if you're screaming at people, trying to force your point of view on somebody else, I try never to do that, although I try to be influential and persuade. But I think there's a big difference in discussions where I'm right, and I must convince you, and you have to accept my point of view, and you have to admit it. It's like warfare. That's what seems to be so negative. Whereas I can have the most liberal on the show here. We can take the most leftist ACLU, you know, card carrying communist, red flag waving, you know, and sorry, the Republicans stuck on that color. But, and, you know, and we can have a discussion. There's two kinds of discussions we can have. We can have a huge exchange of views. It gets emotional. It gets fascinating. And we exchange views. And we never have this compulsion to force the other person to agree with us. That's a good discussion. I feel better from something like that. I think that is cathartic in a way, you know, because it shows you how you can express your own views, and you test your own views by testing against somebody who disagrees. That's one kind. The other kind is you have to believe me, and I'm going to repeat the same thing over and over again. And if you don't believe me, you're an idiot. Now, that's the destructive kind of conversation. So is there a way, is the quality of the discussion part of the therapy, of the outlet? In other words, I'm on the air 3 hours a day. There's nothing I have to talk about after the show. In fact, I hardly talk at all after the show. You know, I go bike ride, I go, you know, play guitar, I work on stuff. I mean, I don't even really like talking on the phone much. Most of the stuff I do is typing, because I get it all out here. So, but I try to keep it healthy. So have you ever analyzed the quality of the discussion in that, are you trying to beat somebody up with your views, or are you just interested in how they think? Because I think that really makes a big difference.
Yes, the quality of discussion is extremely important, because it opens your mind and allows you to have another perspective. Now, if you sit there and you honestly and genuinely listen to people's perspective, you then are going to be able to empathize with them. You might not agree with them, but then you have the chance to empathize, feel what they're feeling, and see it from their point of view. That is one of the best powers that you will ever have in your arsenal, if you can learn to empathize and see things from other people's perspectives. That does not mean believe it or now agree with it, but you need to learn to understand it, because we can't educate people if we don't understand what they need to know first. So I think it's very valuable to sit there and not be mean, argue about these things, say these nasty, hateful things to one another, because, you know, and I'm going to tell you a little secret here, because I know that you're starting to allow the whole supernatural world into your show, and I appreciate that, because I come from that
world.
What
do you mean started to? We never stopped. Lindsay, you're new here.
I mean,
trust me, we never stop.
It's hot and heavy, but there is a belief system that in the soul world that you do choose. You have a soul family, and you do choose what role you're going to play in a person's heart while they're here on Earth. And they
What's
do
a soul
say
family?
That there are people. So a soul family would be like if you believe in reincarnation, right? So you get reincarnated with a certain soul family, and there can be a few or there could be a lot of these people involved in your soul family. So let's say that in my first life, I married a man, and then we pass away, and then we have to come back because maybe he did, though. He still has to play a role because he's in my soul family. So then he decides to come back as my child that, let's say, like, I was a really mean mom in my first life. So then he's going to come back as my son in the second life, and he's going to die at a young age so that my heart experiences the loss of child, and I can now appreciate the value of even being able to birth a child, have a child, create a life, and become a more loving soul for my next reincarnation until I've reached that peak reincarnation of basically Jesus. You walk like Jesus when you get here is a theory behind the soul family. Now, me personally,
can I say something,
and I don't
to that,
know,
please?
Yes, go ahead.
If they coming back, they've been aborted in the womb. They don't get back. Another point.
Well, there's some people who
walking around
say, like, you're just here for a short moment, like babies who die at birth or something like that. Like, that person in your soul family volunteered for that purpose so that you could go through that life lesson. And, like, they come here and then they go right back to the soul world. Now, this is not
my belief system.
This is a system I'm aware of that people believe.
Let me tell you what my family believes in. Northern Ghana, Burkina Faso. We have rituals where the mother is pregnant. She goes through a ceremony with the grandparent. The father's not allowed. And I witnessed one where the priest comes in and she goes into a trance and the baby speaks out of her mouth from the womb, tells who they are, why they're coming back, and what they want. In African society, the babies are born and they may be passed through the village starting at 6 o'clock in the morning and go from home to home to home to home and don't come back to about 7 or 8. People look at that baby and tell who they are coming back. And a lot of the older people, elder people, an elder man is about ready to go back to where the baby is coming from. Therefore, he wants to be around that baby because the baby may be bringing a message from where it just came
from.
It's
very powerful.
One other thing, these women are carrying around a haunted house. If you've had many abortions in a womb, then you try to conceive a child and try to develop that fetus in the womb and hope it comes out natural. Many times it don't because it's in a haunted house. You would not live in Amityville or nor want to drive a car where there was many murders in it.
There's a lot of trauma in that womb. But yes, so, I mean, me personally, we all know, you know, I follow God, I follow Christ, but I'm also very aware that there's a lot more to the supernatural than any of us have been allowed to learn about. So I'm very cautious on what I'm like, that's impossible. I don't believe that. That can't happen because me personally, I do things every day that people tell me are impossible. So I take it all in. I add it to my database. And I sit there and I wait for God to make it all make sense. You know, I don't deny anything. And I don't believe there are certain things that I believe strictly, but I'm learning that we've been lied to about a lot of things. So I don't know.
I'll tell you my story. In fact, Wendy can't make it today, so we have a little extra time until Chancey joins us at 8:30. That's okay. You can stick around for a while, you know, if you have other stuff. But sometime I'll tell you my ghost stories. I mean, I shared a house with ghosts from the age of 13 until I went to college, so 13 to 17. And so I am very familiar. I mean, we're talking about an almost nightly occurrence of seeing supernatural things in my room. Okay, and so I was quite happy with that. And we made
a
peace, you know.
It's a scary situation.
It's not it was scary at first, you know, until I did some research.
It's scary because I'm familiar.
Well, yeah, because people tell you that ghosts are bad and all that kind of stuff. So I've known about the spiritual world ever since I was a kid. And so for to me, it's perfectly natural. I see the spiritual world. I see the connections between spiritual and the physical. You know, I think in many ways I go back and forth all the time, you know, and so I am, you know, the spirits that follow me, you know, the guardian angels, the things that happen, you know, the way things are directed in my life. So this, to me, it's perfectly natural. So not only have I accepted this, I've embraced it completely. So when you, it's kind of funny when you say, you know, we're sort of delving into the spiritual world. So I got news for you, you know, just to let you know, this has been going for a whole long time. And Pianki, the rituals that your family has are fascinating to me. You know, the whole idea of the message that goes from generation to generation. One of the things that Wendy and I talked about, Wendy does the Oh My God report. This is why it's going to be perfect to have Wendy, you know, before you guys, because I asked her the question, you know, what's going to happen when the babies who are aborted, you know, in heaven meet their parents who aborted them in heaven? You know, what's that conversation going to look like? It's going to be really interesting. And that's one of the things we thought about and talked about. And so, like
they're
I said, no topic.
Gonna
no topic
down that that's
what exactly.
Happen.
Yeah. You know, and it's
well,
the
I
folks
like
are going
to
have things to answer
to
for.
Say because
yeah. Go ahead.
That his tradition is so beautiful because people who don't want to believe in that kind of stuff will sit there and look at their grandchild and be like, oh, that's your great uncle right over there. I spitting image of him, acts like him, talks just like him, walks mm-hmm. just like him. But they don't want to believe that there could be a piece of that person's soul truly within that child. I mean, mm-hmm. you show a three-year-old a picture of their great-grandfather, and they know his name. They've seen him. And they just want to act like, oh, that's just a coincidence. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not. And I love the fact that his family has that tradition and appreciates that. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's scary how much we've lost of our own humanity just by the abortions that have been, what, 6 million or some ridiculous amount like that? That's, you know, you want to talk about a Holocaust.
Million is like 70 million.
Well, yeah, whatever the number is, yeah. Lindsay?
And if you have aborted a child, like, I don't want anyone to hate their lives for anything that they ever do. Let's all remember that once we pass away, we gain a complete understanding of everything that we went through and mm-hmm. why it happened to us. So if you abort your child and you meet that child and
nope, you just
child's
cut out.
Been raised by ancestors.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Let me see if
start again.
But
if you meet from,
you
yeah,
need
from
to understand that
yeah.
when a child leaves this earth before it's time or before you think it's time, they go on to heaven. They're surrounded by our ancestors, saints, loved ones, everything like that. So they are being raised by the most loving, joyful souls that you could ever imagine. Now, when you get up there, you might have to sit there and have a moment of repentance with yourself, and you might have to understand what you did, let your heart bleed for it. But people should understand that once you get rid of that baby here, you don't have rights to that baby up there anymore. It goes back to God, and he's going to give that child the life that you were supposed to give it times a million. So I need people to understand that, too. Like, you're not going to go to heaven and have a baby sitting there looking at you like, why'd you kill me?
Well, we were just warning about the question.
I know.
We weren't doing it as a condemnation of people.
Did.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to understand
I know
what
a
you
lady.
Did. You have to feel it.
I know a lady that had an abortion, a young lady, at the 9th month. And after it was all over, she complained to her grandmother. She hears the baby crying in her head. She hears these crying. So, yes, it does have an effect on you.
Well, that's
the human
that's
life.
Satan comes in. You know, Satan can do a lot of things to us. Now, he can make us feel like we are absolutely worthless all the time. You just have to realize something, that we're not perfect. I mean, I could make a really, really bad mistake right now and not understand what I did, and then later I do. And, you know, I could taunt myself for the rest of my life over it, and it could really keep me from accomplishing things that one moment derailed my entire purpose from, you know. So we have to be able to sit there and swallow what we've done, and we got to understand that we are not perfect. We are not.
Well,
there is a time to repent. There is a time to
face
it.
That's what forgiveness is all about, the whole idea of forgiveness,
exactly.
And it includes forgiving yourself.
You can't sit there and make yourself feel bad for decisions that you've made that you weren't knowledgeable about in the beginning.
Well, that's almost,
you know,
perpetuating the initial sin or whatever you did in your life that you regret. All right. And all of a sudden, and if you beat yourself up for that for the rest of your life, we all make mistakes. God, if you can't go through you can't go through life. You know, anybody that hasn't made a mistake also hasn't done anything, you know, because, or hasn't made a decision, you know, that's just natural. But the thing is, you know, repent as is required, you know, ask for forgiveness, and that includes, you know, forgiving yourself, and then learn.
Yeah.
Learn from it, but then, you know, what can you do to better, you know, the planet? What can you do to, you know, make up for anything that you think you've done? You know, what can you do? Like, I'm on a mission for freedom, you know, and I think I'd always be on this mission for freedom. I think I was steered in this direction because I wanted to go in all these other directions, and God's like, nope, you can't have that, can't have this, can't have that. You know, you're going to go here. Okay. You know, so eventually it became clear to me.
Well,
you know, like 60. You know, but anyway, go ahead.
Another thing, too, we think about the blessings, but also there's the curses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also in our society, the sins of the father follow the son. Generational, a generation of curses. You got people that are living with these generational curses. Now, that may be a way to get out from under, but they don't know it.
How about mother and daughters?
Right.
Do those sins follow too?
There's people
Pardon
who
me?
Believe they do.
Well, you said the sins of the father and the son. I'm just wondering if there's another connection, the mother and daughter,
the
mother and
the
son, father and
son. That's why you know, you talk about black Africans that was put in the slave trade. Well, they were put in the slave trade not all for a particular reason. And the descendants of them today have those curses. Those reasons are still what the old black folks used to call were hanks. They've been hanked. Mm-hmm. The hank still exists with them today.
The theory is that if you will continue to be faced with these generational curses until they are met correctly. And if you can't meet them correctly, they'll keep coming. That's why nowadays they say everybody's healing all this generational karma. There are some people who will get in your face about that, though, and say that that's not a thing. But then again, everybody has their own beliefs. I personally think there is generational karma because my life, a lot of ways, has lined up with my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, certain things that my father, And so, like, I can see where it does happen. But if you recognize it, it's very important that you fix it so that it doesn't keep happening to your kids or the next generation. That's where it gets difficult, is healing those generational curses.
Well, you
like,
can
you
change,
gotta be one.
Too. You know, I talk about not being the parent, you know, being the parent that you didn't have. You know, I grew up in a rather, you know, traumatic childhood. So that's pretty common knowledge. But that doesn't mean I did that with my daughter. You know, in fact, I did everything not to be like my
you
folks.
Healed.
And well, yeah, but it requires work. You got to change. You have to do it consciously. You
exactly.
Can't just,
that's
you know,
uncomfortable.
Hope,
that's
you know,
why
you can hope and pray, but
you got haven't done it.
There's
exactly,
a,
but you got to do the
there's
work.
There's a process
yeah.
you can go through, but Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas is a Gullah Geechee. I don't know if you
What's
know
that?
About that ethnic group of blacks that's in the Carolinas who originated over in Sierra Leone, and they speak the language of Gullah. One of the reasons why when he's a kid, they used to tease him because of his thick accent in Gula. And that's why he didn't talk much. But he also has those spiritual principles that came along with that particular ethnic group, traditional cultures. And you probably seen it in the ruling. He said the ruling was wrong. And look at what the wrong ruling had brought about, especially within the abortion of all these kids. Black women, 30 years after Roe, had aborted over 20 million black babies at the rate of 1,200 per day, 50 an hour.
Talk about a mass psychosis.
That was a hard one to listen to. That's hard.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting about what you're saying about Clarence Thomas. There's the ultimate racism in this country that the left doesn't even realize, and I don't think most people realize, and I was just thinking about this now. You know, when nobody really says white people, we talk about Irish Americans, Italian Americans, you know, we talk about anybody else from anywhere else. You know, it's like white people are broken up into all these different groups, Christians, Jews, you know, it doesn't matter what, but African Americans are all African Americans, you know, and they don't think about any connection to Africa other than skin color. But you've got an entire, you know, as many divisions of white and Asian and any other group that's in this country, you've got divisions of black Americans, and no one ever talks about that. And that's something I think we need to
talk about. That. That's a good
we
point.
Need to talk more about that. I want to know about Sierra Leone and his ethnic group. You know, we think of black as one ethnic group, one racial group, one group, one monolithic Democrat-supporting liberal group where conformity is absolutely mandated. And all of a sudden, I think if America knew a Sierra Leone, you know, a group with a particular beliefs, or your family from Ghana, or all these other different families here, this is a racist thing that we need to get through. You want to talk about diversity? Let's talk about black diversity. I don't think everybody's even used that term, black diversity.
Muhammad Ali. He went to Ireland to a town called Eunice to pick up on his long lost biological kinfolks in Ireland.
That's interesting.
Muhammad
that's
Ali.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I actually went to the city where they all embarked from, Cork. It's the city of Cork. No, Cove, excuse me. It's the city of Cove. And I went to the cathedral where all the Irish immigrants, you know, signed their names. It's still there. It was there in the 80s at least. And so County Cork in Ireland, if you go to Cove and go to the cathedral at Cove, you'll find all the immigrants that left for the United States. It's all recorded. Yeah, fascinating. So maybe Muhammad Ali went to that church and went and looked at that book or books. To find his ancestors. That would be fascinating. So who's his connection to Ireland? Do we know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
Jackie?
I don't know. I
was just curious. Go ahead, Lindsay.
I think over the next 5 years, 10 years, I think that a lot of this stuff, like what Pionki said, I mean, we didn't know that was a thing until today. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might have. I didn't know that was a thing. And now I do. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of people shifting to try to embrace these traditions and try to understand them so that we can get a better full view of how we should approach life, how we should treat our children, how we should love each other. And I think it'll bring an appreciation that right now is just non-existent. I mean, nobody sits there and talks about that sort of stuff anymore.
We
and
do.
I think that really is possible. I know we do. But it has caused such a divide.
Yeah.
It has made it so easy for people to be controlled like a video game. Oh, it's just...
Well, is it the programming? And you talked about something really interesting. And I'm going to let you go about 10 minutes before the end of the hour because I got to play a couple things I should have played yesterday longer. But the whole idea of trust, you said, do people trust the news? I never trust the news because the news is not a belief system. But what you're hinting at, and I think you said something incredibly important without even realizing it, the idea of people trusting the news and the idea that the news wants you to trust them. I don't trust what the news says. It's an information source. I take it in. I judge it for myself. If it makes sense through my logic and reason filter, I'll go with it. If it doesn't make sense through my logic and reason filter, I'm going to dispute it. But I never trust it. It's not a belief
part,
system.
Greg, is getting people to get there with us because there's so many who don't see it like that. But there's a way, and we're going to figure it out, and we're going to open their eyes, and they're going to see it. But it's a hard one. The government, those evil people, they really got one over on us with this, with the TV and the fear-mongering and everything.
Hey, listen, give me a million listeners and I'll change the national
they got one over on the 2020 election. And that's what critical race theory is about. It's about bringing, actually, it's about shame in whites is what it's about. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it teaches one side of the history to try to bring blacks back into one monolith because they have moved away from that. Because of education, for one thing, and better jobs, which increase the economic status in the United States. Along with that comes a more conservative sway. I mean, just common sense would tell you. Your economic status go up, you're going to have a conservative sway. You're not going to be for socialism.
You know, we need to talk more about black diversity. I mean, I really like that term, and I think that if black conservatives start talking about not just being black, but being from Ghana, Nigeria, from any other country, Kenya, you know, and with the ethnic group that goes along with that, and this is where my family came from. You know, I'm Canadian and Greek, you know, well, actually English and Greek by ancestry, Canadian and Australian by nationality, you know, naturalized American. Okay, so I can talk about that. And no one criticizes
me. Well, a lie has been told that whites went into Africa and stole people. That's just a lie. That slavery trade was going on long before they ever met a white face. And the reason why is because of the things that war and mayhem, they got rid of people. You either paid restitution, you was either killed or you was gotten rid of. And that's just the way it happened. If you marry... wife told me the other day, she said that she is my property because in their culture, the wife and the children of a man, they are the property of that husband until he dies. Well, it's not in a negative connotation, but when we apply it to what went on in America, they said blacks were the property of whites, and that was wrong. Well, where did that idea come from? Well, I can just imagine.
Yeah.
It was misconstrued.
Yes, it was, just like everything else, twisted to make it into something sick.
It's fascinating you said that the people that were captured as slaves by black Africans, you know, were people that were, what, criminals that did something, some reason to be caught and gotten rid of. So you've got a gene pool of unrepresentative criminals, just like Australia is based on Irish prisoners. I mean, that was the gene pool for Australia. So you wonder why it's a rowdy bunch? Well, they're all descended from Irish prisoners. What did you think was going to happen? You know, and so it's fascinating. You know, we start tracing these ancestries. But I think we need to, you know, in fact, if I could tell black conservative leaders, which I hope to get more of on the show, but if I could say one thing, let's start talking about black diversity. Let's not say black. Let's not say African-American. Let's talk about, you know, where you are. Like I say, and I'm free to talk about, you know, my Canadian and Australian citizenship and my Greek and English heritage. Okay. And that's who I am. Okay. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, so why can't Pianki talk about his Ghana and Nigerian background and the groups that you belong to? You know, I think that is critical for us to start doing that more.
The Asian population did it. Everybody went from just being called Asian to now we call people that person's Chinese. I can tell that person's Japanese, stuff like that. That wasn't a hard thing to learn how to be more aware and acknowledge where people actually come from instead of just grouping them because they look kind of similar. You know?
Yeah, but Asians weren't as weaponized as black folks by the left, you know, except for the internment camps and some of the really horrible things. But against everybody to put white folks on a guilt trip and black people to keep oppressed through, you know, government and education, things like that. The Asian folks were not in the same ballpark in this country.
You are correct. I think that's why that went so smoothly and transitioned so quickly, too.
Yep.
Is because it was just a whole different situation.
Yeah. Well, let me let you sum up. I've got to play a couple of things here before Chancey gets here. And this has been Lindsay, you're doing so well. I really appreciate having you on the show. And let's talk about sort of grouping our wellness folks. And we'll think about that.
Okay. I did talk to them about it. So me and you will talk later about all that. I got some really good feedback. So thank you for everything.
Yeah, let's see. Contact information, websites, businesses, anything you want to talk about, events.
Yes, you can find my nonprofit, The Testament Corporation, on Facebook. You can find me on TikTok. It's at Lindsay Galen Horton. I do my Reiki healing videos. And if you need to contact me for an appointment, you can email me at lghorton33@gmail.com.
Yep, and if you missed any of that, that's why we have a podcast. Thanks, Lindsay. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, let's play some stuff here, and I'll be right back with Chancey Terry at the bottom of the hour. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Even the title of Federalist Number 12 is bad. The utility of the Union in respect to revenue. First of all, the Union was not created for Alexander Hamilton, who wrote Federalist Number 12, to rule it, nor was the Union created for his utility, nor for the Union to generate revenue. Hamilton says, "The prosperity of commerce is now perceived and acknowledged by all enlightened statesmen to be the most useful as well as the most productive source of national wealth, and has accordingly become a primary object of their political cares." Such grand assumptions. All enlightened statesmen? So those who disagree must be stupid by comparison. Commerce is supposed to bring wealth. That's why we engage in it. But commerce is for private wealth, entrepreneurial wealth, investor wealth, and more. It is not for governed national wealth unless the commerce is nationalized. Maybe that's what Hamilton had in mind when he talked about commerce becoming, quote, a primary object of their political cares. Hamilton and the Federalists appeared to believe that not only the Constitution and the federal government should serve elitists like himself, but the commerce of the nation should also. I can see why the anti-federalists were so popular, and why people are encouraged by government to study only the Federalist Papers. Consider this paragraph. The ability of a country to pay taxes must always be proportioned in a great degree to the quantity of money in circulation and to the celerity with which it circulates. Commerce contributing to both these objects must of necessity render the payment of taxes easier and facilitate the requisite supplies to the treasury. In other words, don't tax more than a certain portion of the money supply so taxes flow in easily. So the goal here is to tax not on the necessary expenditures of government, but on how great a proportion the federal government can tax to facilitate supplies of money to the treasury most easily. It's also interesting that Hamilton does not trust the states at all regarding commerce or anything else, which is ironic because it's the states that delegate all power to the federal government through the Constitution. But Hamilton is so contemptuous of the states. He thinks their purpose is to conspire to commit commerce in a way the federal government could not tax. Again, according to Hamilton, like people, businesses are to serve the federal government. He says, the relative situation of these states, the number of rivers with which they are intersected, and of bays that wash their shores, the facility of communication in every direction, the affinity of language and manners, the familiar habits of intercourse, all these are circumstances that would conspire to render an illicit trade between them a matter of little difficulty and would ensure frequent evasions of the commercial regulations of each other. Stating things not at all in evidence that they are in fact evident, Hamilton once again claims that only a national, not federal, national, as in a top-down supremacist government, can be trusted to collect the taxes and keep the treasury full. Whereas the states, which are sovereign entities, will break into confederacies and ruin all Hamilton's plans to run the economy with the national government. He concludes, it is therefore evident that one national government would be able, at much less expense, to extend the duties on imports beyond comparison further than would be practicable to the states separately or to any partial confederacies. The only thing that is evident to me is that Alexander Hamilton wants a strong national government so his fellow elitists can control the economy and put away money in the treasury based on how much money they can get away with putting in the treasury and use for their own purposes. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force. your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancy Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday.
Hello. Hello, hello. I think you're muted. I'm unmuted.
I forgot to unmute myself. I feel like such an idiot.
I do that about
every couple months I'll do that. Yeah, so I just had this great introduction. Okay. Let me start again. Back from her around the world trip, from her great time on the road, we have the one and only Chancy Terry back from wherever you went. Where'd you go? What'd you do?
Salt Lake City, Utah, and then I went to West Virginia, Snowshoe, West Virginia. So I was gone for 2 weeks. And I'm back. So it's been
amazing.
What'd
you learn? Yeah, what'd you learn?
We went to a Young Living convention in Salt Lake City, Utah. So I got to see how they grow the plants, the herbs, how they put them in the bottles, the way that they do the soil, the things that they do to make it seed to seal. Basically, they plant and they seal the oils, and the difference between the fact of the ones that you can buy in Walmart versus the ones that we have. They had amazing, like, huge horses and big sheep and goats, and those go through the fields, and, like, they're the weed eaters. They're the pest eaters. They don't do pesticides or any kind of weed eating or anything. Like, even the field that we parked in was high grass because they move the animals around so that they can eat the grass and then poop in the fields, and then that's the fertilizer. So it was just a really cool thing to see. And then they don't plant the same plant in the same field. Every year they swap the soil out so that it doesn't malnourish the soil, which is what we've been doing for years with even organic vegetables.
This is regular farming. This is what farmers used to do. This is what farmers have done for centuries. Crop rotation, leaving the fields, without planting for a year or two, having the cows eat the grass and the poop to fertilize the next generation of grass. This is not organic. This is what we used to call normal. this is before the chemical, petrochemical, nitrogen fertilized, John D. Rockefeller Standard Oil method of farming and medicine.
Yep.
Fascinating.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, okay. And it was awesome to see. Yeah, it was beautiful. And like how they pull trees off the mountains with big tractors, and then the tree is just a beautiful, beautiful place. It was very high altitude, very dry.
They replant the trees.
Yes.
Right?
And it's the juniper trees are.
Oh, okay.
The juniper trees, they do not they don't plant another tree, because the juniper trees, apparently, that's why they're so abundant there, is that they reseed themselves. Like the juniper berries fall off so much that you don't have to replant them.
Juniper berries, don't you?
Maybe. I don't know.
Gin.
Oh, Jim. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. I was like, wait, what is from
Jim
there?
Comes
yeah.
From
yeah.
Denver.
So
I just said it. Yeah, I know something about this too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
No, I'm
so then
yeah.
We went to West Virginia, and it was just like dirt bike madness. So watching amazing athletes just wreck their bodies and be able
yeah,
to be there
fun.
For that. So
yeah. Do you ride? Have you ever ridden a motorcycle?
No, my husband does. I ride a dirt bike, but it's a small dirt bike to get from pit to pit. But my hands and my ankles are my money makers. So if I cut or scrape or bruise or anything like that, I can't work. So that's my excuse.
Okay, now you got me
like
curious. How do you make
burn...
money off your ankles? You, I mean, I understand the hands because you're
a massage walking,
therapist.
Standing. Walking and standing.
Oh.
So
oh,
like I can't. I could massage sitting down, but it would be very hard. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
So,
all right. So you're not walking on people.
Yeah.
Physically.
Yes.
Right?
Not yet. I plan
yet.
To in my new, whenever I have a place, I plan to do that, but it will be long-term.
Walk
maybe,
on therapy?
Know.
Okay.
But yes, there is massage with your feet. Uh-huh. So you massage, and that's like the older version of massage because it saves your ankles. Your feet are meant to be weight-bearing. Your hands aren't. And so massage therapist's body usually starts breaking down around 10 years because we're putting all of our weight into our hands versus our feet.
Oh.
So they'll swap over and they put a rod over the table and you literally massage with your feet. So it's pretty cool.
Hey, look, one day there's going to be a massage machine. You're all going to be out of business. It's going to have,
you know
hermetically warmed hands. It's going to feel like completely natural. And it's like, oh, what a great machine. Oh, thank you. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it's interesting. Chiropractors, I'll just give you a quick example, have this new thing called the X-Rator, which I call the jackhammer. And it's really good, though. It's this little thing that taps every vertebrae of your spine in place. And you can hear it going tap, 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 tap. But that's a machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's replaced and it's great. It doesn't hurt. There's no adjustment.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing what the tools can do, but then the intention is gone. So the touch of the chiropractor and the touch of the massage therapist hopefully will always be needed because that's what I get a lot of. They're like, I've never had a massage like this. No one's ever touched me like this. No one's ever like done what you're doing. And I'm like, well, no, because I'm chancy and you got something from someone else. So, and
so
same thing with the chiropractor.
You...
Like,
develop your own system? Are you just more in tune with people? Is it as a spiritual connection? All of the above?
Yes.
Why are you different?
Yes. All the above. So
okay.
I think that because I started really young, well, not young, but 19 is when I started massaging and I opened my own business. And so I took every single client and I would pray for them while I was massaging them because that's how I was raised. If you lay hands on, you know, like laying on of hands, Pentecostal, Church of God, all that. So I'm like, well, if I'm putting my hands on somebody, I'm just going to lift them up in prayer. So I did not know that that was tuning me in to their field. And I was able to, and then it became more personal. Like after a massage, they would tell me something. They're like, I don't even know why I'm telling you this or, you know, and it just went for years and years. And then it was like, oh, well, maybe I'm doing something that other massage therapists aren't doing. And so
well, they're not
as
doing
I started
the
getting massages
they're just,
from...
They're just doing the massage. You're actually
yeah.
doing the massage and the
right.
therapy. And I think that
yes.
part gets left
therapy.
Out. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. 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 And so, you know, it's kind of like the princess and the pea. The more you do it, the more you feel. And so the more I used my hands, the more I could tell temperature change and vibrations in the body. And then I didn't know what those meant. And so I started looking into what those meant. And it helped me after a massage talk to them about, you know, if your hips are cold, maybe you're having a hard time making a decision in your life. And they'd be like, how do you know that? I am. I'm going through a divorce or, you know, and or something like that. So it was like, okay, here we are. Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's like if the knees are cold, you know, it's just different things for different people. So, and here, and then you can tell if an organ's cold or if like some ribs are out or it's just a.
Why
a
would they be
cold?
Is there a lack of, is the body sheltering
lack of
that
circulation.
Organ? Circulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why does the body do that?
Yeah.
Why would the body do that?
Well,
that's
not on me, but that's like ancient Chinese medicine. It's like the qi and the ki and the we and the, all the things. And so there's something missing in that organ. So there's no life force to that organ. So it's cold. And that's where I get it from. And then I don't know what to, I mean, I know what to do about it, but like, that's just how I read it. So you could go really deep into the meridians and then the acupuncture points and the acupressure. And that's all, it's all connected. And that's what they used to all do. They would find a point in the body that was lack of circulation, stick a needle in it, and then it would allow chi or energy to flow through that area back into the organ, and then the organ starts working, and then you release the grief and the pain and the worry and the fear, and you're better. So Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's where the olds come in, is they have a frequency that they just are. Like, they're a plant and they have their own frequency, and they test the frequency of the oil before it is put in a bottle so that it matches the frequency that they're going for.
How do they do that?
And if you are going with, I have no idea, some fractometer, some kind of machine. So it's like basically how you would test the frequency of anything. But they test the frequency and then they put it in the bottle, and then they make sure that, like, you know, they test like random bottles off the shelf and make sure that they're all holding that, you know, resonant energy of juniper or copaiba or rosemary or frankincense. And that's where you get into when you buy these other oils that are on the shelf with acetone or alcohol in them. They're not going to hold the frequency of that plant as high. And then you're diffusing alcohol and acetone and other synthetic thinners, and it smells like peppermint, but you're not getting the benefits of peppermint. And there's nothing, I mean, you know, people don't know until they know. So you apply the oil to that area that is lacking a frequency, and it raises the frequency of that organ. So pretty cool. It's like all science-y, but spiritual woo-woo-ness at the same time.
No, I think we're onto something here, because if an organ's cold, it's not vibrating. And if it's not vibrating at its frequency, vibrations create warmth. Vibrations create friction and waves and things like that. So is there a connection here between cold organ and the fact that it's not vibrating at its correct frequency, or the frequency of the other organs? Is there a connection there? Okay.
Yes. So you're at a lower vibration, you know, like vibes, man. So like your vibe is low. Something's going on. You're in dis-ease. You came in contact with something that has lowered your vibration, whether it be hate, anger, death, grief, any kind of negative emotion. And those hold in certain organs. Now that is a whole nother thing, but it's like each organ, like we talked about way before, you know, like the heart holds something, the lungs, soul holds something, the liver holds something.
No, that's what I was curious.
So,
I remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that chat. Yeah.
Yep. So there, and then it goes out into, well, I'm having low back pain, and it's like, well, your kidneys might be a problem. You know, it might not be your low back, or it could be your low back. So we have to figure, you know, go from there. But either way, if you treat the whole area, you're creating change. So, and then when someone is just aware of it, like if you say that about the hips or something being cold, and you tell them, are you trying to make a decision? It's okay to make that decision. Then, like, the awareness removes the lower frequency. So. And it's like, that's where we need to live constantly, is in that now moment of awareness. Am I aware of what's going on in my body right now, and how do I affect it? Not how I'm going to feel in 5 days or how I felt 5 days ago. How do I feel right now, and how do I affect it? And it may mean that you have to scream or throw something, and that's okay. People hold too much in, and they don't, you know, or die out laughing if you need to, or, you know, cry if you need to.
Yeah, it's funny. I always think back to I was thinking back to my first chiropractic appointment when I was 17, and rebellious teenager saying that I am going to get healthy. I don't have to live with a bad back my whole life. This is not a natural condition, you know, and I ended up laughing for about 45 minutes because for the first time in probably my entire life, all the nerves were released from the pressure of being out of adjustment, which I've been forever.
Yeah.
And as soon as that happens, it's like, oh, I've done the right thing. You know, I giggled uncontrollably for about 45 minutes. I couldn't stop laughing. It was hysterical. And then eventually wore off. It was like a euphoria. And you know, they explained, the chiropractor explained, it's probably been years that your nerve impulses have been crushed. So my entire development of my youth was with, blocked nerves. That's not good.
And where you've gotten, that's every child walking around right now. They haven't been touched in 2 years as much as they would have been in their growth factor. So they haven't hugged Nana or Aunt Sally or Uncle Jim, or, you know, they can't touch kids at school. They can't play. Like, it's been, we've really royally screwed up their nervous system. And
doctors
so,
don't touch. Yeah. Doctors used to tap. They you know, push in your abdomen. They push on things and they tap here and tap there. And, you know, I guess they were testing for vibrations. I never thought about it, you know, until just now. But, you know, doctors even touch patients anymore unless they have to, you know, and even then, you know, but we've removed, you know, any human contact. That's the biggest curse, the isolation. Now that creates its own vibration. Now what happens to a human being in isolation? How does that change their vibration?
Well, it is usually because they're not around other people's vibrations. So that's the whole thing. Your vibe attracts your tribe. So if you're doing nothing, if you're in a secluded room and nobody enters it, or like maybe a nurse ratchet or somebody that doesn't want to give you your medicine and she's all depressed and doesn't want to talk to you, you know, like if you're in the hospital or if you're in a nursing home, or if you just stay home by yourself and you pick delivery up off the porch, you're not around anybody else's vibrations but your own. And then you are the only one controlling that, and it's probably sad and depressed. So it makes every organ have to work at its highest capacity, which runs them out really fast. And that's what we were dealing with. We're dealing with it now. We were dealing with it during, you know, the shutdowns, and people just don't want to admit that touch is important and it's not sexual. And even if it is, that's also what you need. So you got these couples not sleeping in the same bed anymore because they have five kids and they don't want to, you know, oh, we got to stay together for the kids. Well, yeah, it'd be better just separating for the kids, because you're ruining the kids, because your vibration is affecting your kids' vibration.
The kids know.
Yeah, and the kids know. They instinctually know, and they don't even know that they know. And so it comes out as stomach aches or toothaches or headaches or depression or pulling their hair out or, you know, so those things that parents look at, and then they're still trying to fix the kid, and then they're still separating and being in misery. So,
oh,
like,
I knew my parents
yourself.
Were
going to
get divorced 8 years before they did.
Right. Yeah. But you got kids now, though, that are shoved a tablet and an iPhone, and they don't see it as that their family is affecting them. They go down the rabbit hole of, I've got depression and anxiety. I need Adderall, and I need Klonopin, and I need Paxil, and I need Xanax, because all my friends are 19, and they're on it. So, you know, it's like they don't see it as nobody's. And again, because you were connected, you didn't have anything else to do but live in your home. Now kids are everywhere all the time. They're, you know, they don't even talk to their parents. They talk to other people's parents more than they talk to their own parents. And then they compare their parents to other people's parents and other people's, you know, lifestyle. So it's just, yeah, I don't know where we're at. But we need to go back to the whole being selfish. You should only worry about yourself, and then everything else will figure itself out. And don't be an a-hole, but just,
and that's a good,
you know,
thing, too, that
people
don't realize they're self. It's not selfish. It's self-preserving.
No.
You know, Ayn Rand was big on that, or Ayn Rand. You know, go watch The Fountainhead. It's the world's greatest movie. But just talking about the virtue.
Who?
She wrote a book on the virtue of selfishness. Ayn Rand, or
yeah.
Ayn Rand, A-Y-N, a Russian author. And
okay.
She talked about individual achievement, individuality, objectivism. Basically, your object is to, to get the rewards for your work. Your work is your work. You know, what you create is yours. It's not, you don't live for for society. You don't live for the greater good, the public good. You live for yourself.
Right.
And everybody living for themselves actually creates a greater society, because all achievement ultimately is individual. Yeah. Well, that's what she said.
Yeah. $100. Yeah. So God gave her that book because God gave Conversations with God to John Walsh, and it's the exact same thing. And so that's where we also get into, is like God's truth is being spoken to people still today, and it's being written down. And we're like, wait a minute, how did that person say the same thing that this person said? And it's like, well, because God still talks to people. And so that author affected those people, and then those people who read that book, they will be better for it. And that's where I got, like, the Conversations with God changed my life. It's a 3-part series. I'm in the third book. And when you read it, you can't go back. So it's truth.
Who wrote it?
And once you read truth,
who's
John Walsh, I think is his name. His last name is Walsh, W-A-L-S-H.
Okay.
I want to say his first name's John. I don't keep up with things like that, but it is on the front of the book, and I can let you know. But,
and what's it called? Conversations with God?
Yeah, it's amazing. Conversations with God. And it's about the same thing. It's like a man, he just started, he was going through a tough time, and he heard an audible voice, and he was like, wait a minute, that's not me. And so he started writing it down, and then it was in like the 90s, and you can read it now, and it's exactly what's going on right now. And so that's how you know it's God's word. You know, like if you open up some of the Bible that's actually God's word, you open it up and it's still true today.
Yeah, that's what we have Wendy for.
So.
Wendy tells us what is actual Bible.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I love Wendy. Yeah.
Well, it's you know, we have Wendy's going to be, we're going to be changing our schedule around a little bit here. I'll make an announcement once I talk to everybody, but it's going to work out really well. So Wednesdays are going to be pretty amazing around here. Not that they aren't already.
Yes, Wednesdays are going to be great. No, they're awesome. And we're already talking about, we'll have to do it with you or with anybody else. Like, we're actually going to incorporate, and I guess I can say this on there, but we're going to incorporate like our channels with your channel, and then we'll come interview Greg. Doing action radio, you know what I mean?
Well, let's do an interview.
Yeah.
Let's do a video.
So
we don't have video capability.
That's what I mean, a video.
Talk radio.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to do that.
It'll be a video.
Sounds good. Yeah.
So
but we
cool
can't video the show just because of the nature of Blog Talk Radio, because we're all calling in by phone. There's no way to, it's not like a Zoom. And so we don't have that capability. Yeah. So that's why you listen. But I actually like the fact that people listen and aren't distracted by a video. Well, let me ask you this, because you're the perfect person to ask this too. If you don't have your vision is what most of people take their senses in with. But if you're actually listening, it goes right to your brain. You know, and so listening, I think, is a very different process than watching. I know everybody's obsessed with Well, you know where I'm going with this. So go ahead and tell me, listening versus watching.
Well, there is no versus. It's just one or the other. And you get something from either way. So some people are visual learners. And like me, sometimes I space out when I'm just hearing words. I'd rather be watching something. But then there's times where, like, if I'm watching something, I'm going to listen to it. So it just depends on if I like what I'm watching, I'll listen. And then if I don't like someone's voice, I don't listen and I'll watch. So it's just like, it just depends. And that's how I know, like, from working on other people and talking to other people, there are people who don't work or they just love YouTube and they would watch a 3-hour show just to say they watched it. And the antics of people and the laughter on their faces and the cute little things that might happen or like seeing behind the scenes stuff. And you can record the show. You just put everybody on speakerphone. Like if you were on speakerphone right now and I had my laptop up and I was recording myself talking to my laptop on Zoom, they would hear you because you're right here. So I would just put you on speakerphone. So it's that simple. And then like if another person is recording their face while they're talking, you know, it's all the things. So, yeah, it's just about having a good microphone system, a good, you know, all the little, you know, technicality stuff. But it's doable, especially in today. And, like, each person can go live on their own Instagram while they're doing it. And it's like, it's widespread. Yeah. So, yeah. That's where we're at. We're going to do it.
Okay.
It's going to be amazing. Huh. We'll have a TV show or a movie.
See, Bianchi has that's ultimately where we're going. I'd like to have the video component. I also like the radio just because, you know, especially for folks driving and things like that, they can play the podcast.
Right, it's all like encompassing,
Yeah, but I thought that was a different process. Yeah, and it's funny you should say that too, because a lot of times I'll listen to something and I'll have, you know, like we used to have One American News, you know, Fox News, you know, just the video part. So I have something video that I can watch, because the amount of information that I take in, the rate at which I do it, if it's not on hyperdrive, I get bored. I have an attention span of a gnat.
Yeah. You know?
So if it's not constantly fast, and this is why the show is so fast paced, why we have so many people on, why we cover so much so quickly, is because that's how I operate. That's my brain speed.
Right.
And if I don't have that brain speed, you know, I get distracted.
And your vibe attracts your tribe. So you attract the people that are also that mindset. And then that's where you are. So you attract people who are the same way. Like, I want a lot of information really quickly. Don't dilly-dally. I don't, you know, like, tell me the point. Don't go down a rabbit. I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole, but it needs to be interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just, and it attracts people that talk like that. And that's why we're all like, blah, 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 because we've got a lot
like
going
I said,
on in our head.
Yeah. ADHD and God drives this show. You know, how much
exactly.
Well, maybe I should say God and ADHD
and
drives the show, but it really does.
God and ADHD, because it's the same thing. And, like, that's a deep, deep, deep subject that people don't want to listen to me sometimes. I'm like, your kid is not ADD, ADHD. It's gifted. Your child is gifted, and it's hearing from its higher self, and it doesn't know how to speak from its higher self and itself at the same time, so it jumps all over the place, when really it's the same thing. We need to be teaching people to get into spirituality and, like, listen to what is being said in their head and determine if it's me or if it's I'm hearing someone else's thoughts, because it's a thing. And so that's where this ADD, ADHD stuff comes from, is, like, my kid is all over the place. And it's like, well, he might be picking up on the kids in his classroom that they're being beat at home, or, like, you know, you don't know, because it can't tell you. The kid, it just says, oh, well, I don't want to do my homework, or I'm going to walk over here and talk to Sally, or I'm going to sit in my seat and, you know, throw a pen at so-and-so. It's their brain is absorbing things at a very fast rate, and those kids need to be put in a special class, and they need to be paid attention to, because those are our CEOs, and those are our, those are our geniuses, and we have labeled it that way, just like we label everything else, as a disease or a problem, so that when you want to be diagnosed with it, you can get a pill, and then you take the pill, and then it takes away your gift.
And
I don't know
like
how many people
else.
I've talked to.
You're just like everybody else, then. Isn't that special?
Yes,
I'm going to bring
isn't that great?
We have one of our callers from the next hour.
I was prescribed Xanax at 19.
Say that again for just a second, but I want to bring Lacey on, who's one of our guests in the next hour, in case she wants to jump in this hour since she called in a little bit early. So you're with Chancey Terry. Pianki's on the line. I'm here. This is Lacey. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free. If you just want to kind of hang and listen, you can do that too. Lacey, welcome back to the show. I guess she's muting and listening. All right, Chancey, you just that's okay. He'll leave it in line live, you know. Anyway, if she wants to jump in here, but you were just saying something. This whole idea, you know, it's not ADHD; it's gifted. It's in modern society, we're all equal society. You know, anybody who's different or special or in any way, you know, doesn't quite fit the mold. Like, I don't know, me, you know, gets immediately labeled. You know, I'm just glad I got through school before ADHD was a thing. Otherwise, I would have been the first one drunk.
Right.
Guarantee you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you say?
Yeah.
You said something really cool.
And that's it. I said that I was prescribed Xanax at 19 because I was over anxious. I was over worried about everything, always thinking about everything,
you're 19,
processing
you're a teenager.
Everything.
What teenage
I know,
girl
but
isn't
I also
about
yeah, but I was also
I raised,
raised
one.
By parents. I was also raised by parents who were like very, very old souls. So I was shown the world in a completely different way than other 19-year-olds who all they had to worry about was their makeup and their hair that day. So I, of course, I was self-employed. You know, I worked for self-employed family. I was working at 16. So, I worried about bills and money and car. Like, they didn't take any of that into consideration. It's like, oh, well, you shouldn't have anything to worry about because you're 19 and, you know, the world's great. And it's like, no, you're just not looking at the full picture. And so when I see parents, they're like, my kid's 16 and they're, you know, they're cutting themselves and they're doing all the things. I'm like, well, what's the home environment like? Are y'all all the time talking about how broke you are and how, you know, you hate your body and you're, you know, so it's not ever, you know, one thing. That's what I tell all my clients. It's like, they're like, what's one thing I can do? And I'm like, the one thing you can do is really.
Nope, you just cut out for a second. The one thing you can do is take two.
Is know that it is never one thing. Like if you just know that it's never one thing. If you want to know one thing that you can do is realize that it's never one thing.
Yeah,
and it answers
exactly.
A lot of questions. Because then
it's
you quit
like the first rule here
the
is there are no rules. The first rule here is there are no rules.
Yeah. And then the second thing is real quick is that like it was the same thing with my husband before I knew him. He was diagnosed with ADHD and they wanted to put him on Ritalin. Well, he was eating and drinking a lot of red dye. And every time he would drink a Sunkist, it would get worse. But we didn't know anything about red dye back then. So finally, thank God, somebody came into their life and told them that. They cut out all red dye, all ketchups, all anything that had any kind of coloring or food coloring to it, and he got fine. And then they tested his IQ, and he was like on the genius level. And it was because he couldn't focus. It was like, you know, his brain was going 90 to nothing. So he would have been on Adderall or Vyvanse or anything like that in these days and time. But that's the first response we're doing now because we don't have time. We're not taking time with each child and looking at their entire, you know, everything. You got to look at in, on, and around.
Do you think
and that's
if
what I
we
think.
If we required an IQ test before prescribing Ritalin, Adderall, or any of these mind-numbing drugs, do you think that would be a benefit?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that if the FDA and all this
can
figure out a way.
There's your next bill, Chancey. So we need your help.
Yeah,
on that.
I know. Yeah. I know. And especially if you could get the government involved in that to where they could get paid, like they would do it in a heartbeat. But that's the thing. They don't want to prove that your kid's smart because then you might do something with it. But they want to tell you that your kid's something's wrong with them.
Well, that would have helped me because my parents kept telling me I was an idiot, you know, that everybody else was smart.
Mm-hmm. I know.
You know, so that's what I grew up with. So I didn't do a lot of things for a long time until I realized that they were totally lying to me. And, you know, I started beating everybody in arguments and things. It's like, well, gee, I'm pretty stupid. How am I able to do this? Well, maybe I'm not so stupid.
How am I able to do this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe
you
got
to challenge your assumptions.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. But
it's like maybe it's triggered.
Yeah.
They're triggered that it's a mirror. That's the thing. It's like when you look at someone and it affects you in a bad way, it's you're seeing the bad in yourself. And so that's what a lot of parents are doing to their children right now. They're seeing the bad in themselves and they're taking it out on their children. And it's not really bad, just the negative side of themselves. You know, the things that they don't like about themselves and they're seeing it in their children and they're beating their children up for it, like verbally, and making them feel like they're worthless when you need to work on yourself, which goes back to be selfish, which is of self. Be, you know, you can rename it, use the different word for it, whatever, you know. happening. So there's a little
bit
of
going around
where
talking
it comes
to my
back
folks.
Full circle.
Yeah, my folks aren't with us anymore, so it's too late for them to do change, as we say. But it's just, it would have been nice to have someone talk to them and say, what are you doing? This kid seems to have it together. I mean, I soloed an airplane at 16. You know, it's not like I was an idiot.
Yeah.
In fact, I did things like that specifically to prove that I wasn't an idiot. You know, I mean, this is part of my psychology. So my rebellion was actually a rebellion of accomplishment against people that were perpetually trying to say, tell me all the things I couldn't do. You know, so it's interesting how we rebel. Mm-hmm. People that rebel against authoritarian stuff by being bad. You know, in my case, I rebelled by being responsible, you know, by doing things properly.
Right.
You know, it's very interesting how that works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
I know you got somebody coming on at 9.
Oh, I do.
So
I just
want
to
get
one more question for
everybody.
Yeah, I'll get your. We got about a minute. I think everybody, the party's here, join us now. But my question is, do you know of or can you give me a decent IQ test? Because I'm curious.
Oh, no, I don't. Mm.
Okay.
But I can look into that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure they've all been skewed as well. So,
well, that's,
you know,
that's
over
my
the years,
thing, the online
sure
stuff.
Been...
I mean, I want a real one. I mean, because now I am curious, you know, and not that it's
going
to dominate my life. If it tells me I'm stupid, I'm not going to go, oh, Jack, I am stupid. No, that's not going to happen. But just out of curiosity, you know, if I'm over that genius line, I want to know. Just because, and hopefully I don't get arrogant. So then I have to tell you people, don't make me arrogant. Okay, so, you know, I got to keep this in perspective.
Yeah.
So, okay.
You would benefit probably from the Enneagram. Which is the number thing, which is, I think, another way of telling you your IQ
numbers.
In a different way.
No. Yeah. Give me the words, man. I can't relate to numbers. Numbers and I have a very bad
No, it's a number, but then it has words with it. Like, you get your number, and then the number tells you who you are, and it's pretty dang accurate. And you're like, okay, this is it. And that's what Paige does. So Paige does Lifeline, and it's like it goes into, like, the day you were born, and the magnetic pull on the earth, the day you were born and where the planets were and all the things. And that created Greg, like, period. And so then, of course, moving around affects that too. Like what states you go to and how, you know, you've flown, you've been up, blah, 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 all the things, all that affects it. But the day, like the, where you were, your head came out of the womb and you were here. Like, let's look at that. And then you go back and it's like, whoa. Yeah, that's it. So you need to get that done. It'd be amazing.
Oh. Oh, I intend to. Mm-hmm. My three favorite new people who are all in the wellness area. We've got Lindsay, we've got Chansey, and we've got Paige. And you know, it's going to be we've only just begun to work together. We've got a lot of things to do.
Yes.
Let me let you go. So give all your information. Yes, tell people how to find you. And
ChanceyTerry.com, ChanceyTerry.com, ChanceyTerry.com. Everything's on there. There's links to all my things: organic wine, wellness, and you can contact me about weed, and I'll help you. So take care. Have a beautiful day. And I hope that the next guest is not, I don't know. I don't even know where to go with that.
Don't worry about it. Just listen
okay,
in.
Okay, because you didn't say anything.
Tell
her
live,
I said hello. Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
I'll talk to you soon. Thank y'all. Right. Bye, Pianki. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
He's probably muted, too. Be right back.
Bye-bye. Be careful.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Oh boy. Here we go again. These amazing women, Lacey and Sarah. I'm going to make their lines live. We also have Michael Volpe with us, too. If you missed our show 2 weeks ago, then you definitely want to go back, because I don't want to have our folks tell our stories again, except maybe to summarize a little bit of what happened. This is the title of the show, Follow-Up to Moms Arrested at Gunpoint for Saving Their Kids. I mean, this actually happened. I'm not doing that for sensationalism. I do want to alert people to some of the horrible things that are happening, but this is real. And so these folks came on bravely a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to continue this. We have some legislation in mind. We have some reforms. We have all kinds of things. And so it's going to be another one of these incredible hours. So let's, like I said, I had Lacey who called in earlier. I'm only going to do first names with our folks here, unless they want to say further. That's up to them. Lacey, welcome back to the show. How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. Yeah, so I gave you the chance to talk to Chancy when she was on. I do that a lot of times. If you call in early, you get an opportunity to sort of, you know, talk to our other guests and other reporters. We do a lot of overlap here, which makes it kind of fun. Sarah, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Lacey, Michael, and Katie. Thanks for having us back on. It's great to talk with you again.
Oh, thank you. Michael's on. Katie hasn't joined us yet, so when she does, I'll let you know. Michael, how did you get into all this? And meet these two amazing people.
You invited me.
Well, I know that, but maybe I don't quite know. Did you work with Michael before this, or you just got to know each other recently, or how did it all come about?
I don't remember who reached out to me.
Okay.
But I haven't really worked with the ladies. I just
know
a little
bit
about their stories.
Surprise, surprise. Well, in that case, let's go a little bit, let's get some details here, and then you can tell me, you know, where you want to go with it, because we've had sort of a group chat going for a while, and you got a ton of stuff that I unfortunately didn't have a whole lot of chance to read, so we can talk about that now. So let's start with Sarah, and then we'll go to Lacey, and then we'll get Michael back involved. Sarah, do you want to sort of briefly outline, you know, what brought you here?
Yeah, really what brought me here, I had been arrested about 2.5 years ago. And that was for fleeing domestic violence with my two young sons, who the court systems really utterly failed, Child Protective Services failed to protect. And I have to say, it's been a really, really lonely journey out there. You feel very alone. There's a lot of people that criticize your actions. You know, and all for all of their intensive purposes, you know, if you're a good Samaritan and you save somebody from an assault, you save someone for a rape, you're a hero. But unfortunately, as a protective parent, when you're protecting your own children from domestic abuse, from assault, from rape, people impose criminal, consequences for that. And for such a long time, I had really just felt like I was the only person in the world, you know, dealing with my situation, until I saw a post by a local organization about Lacey and her story. And it was really quite compelling, because the details of Lacey's story were so, so much like mine. That I felt like I had to reach out to Lacey and connect with her and hear her story. And it was really scary, because the comparison between Lacey's story, how different aspects of the court barred evidence, barred testimony, how Child Protective Services dealt with the child, my children. I mean, it was very scary. And, you know, in moving forward, since then, I have met at least half a dozen other mothers in similar situations facing criminal charges and the like for protecting their own children. And this really does need to stop. This is an epidemic that's happening in the United States. This is an epidemic that's happening worldwide. And I felt like I needed to put my voice out there and advocate for protective parents like myself, like Lacey, and like others that I have met.
Yeah, we're still waiting for our other person to join us if she wants. And I had to mute both Lacey's and Michael's line simply because we had some background noise. So when you're not actively talking on the air, then I just mute your line. And just so we get that, it could be feedback, could be computer, could be the phone too close to the computer, someone else listening, whatever it is, I just do that. And that way we sort of eliminate the background noise and get a better podcast for the folks when we're done. So Lacey, why don't you reintroduce yourself? And this will help Michael, and this will help our new listeners. I probably should have done that now that I think about it. Lacey, welcome back, and let's
good morning.
Tell your story. Yeah.
So my name is Lacey Newell. I was arrested back in March of 2021, March 24th, by gunpoint, actually by the U.S. Marshals, for the same thing as Sarah. The courts in Nevada County, California, failed my child miserably. CPS, I had reached out to them numerous times. They followed their program, which is obviously broken, and failed my daughter. All of the court personnel, the guardian ad litem that they put in my case, the reunification counselor, all of these things committed perjury and aided a abuser in gaining custody of my daughter. And as this went on, I just decided that, you know, as any mother would, that you have to protect your child from further abuse, and ended up going into hiding, and while in hiding, reaching out to numerous organizations, including the National Missing and Exploited Children, trying to seek some ramification, some solution, something to figure out how to, you know, fix this, because no child can live this way for the rest of their life. Like, they need to go to school. They need to be able to have a normal life and be a part of society. And in doing all of that, all it did was get me caught. And nobody did any investigations. Nobody did any justifying for my child. Nobody did their job to actually find out the problem that caused all of this. Instead, they just wanted to point the finger at me as being this horrible person that alienated my child from her father and kidnapped, you know, my own child, who I've had custody of since she was born and have not been convicted of any crimes, especially anything that would cause me to lose custody of her. So I have not seen or heard my daughter since March 24th of 2021. I was not allowed to tell her goodbye. Sorry, I'm a little emotional today about this.
Oh, Lacey, it's perfectly understandable. You know, we're not talking about, you know. Yeah.
But I did reach out to Michael several weeks ago. I believe it was before he was on your show. I'm not quite sure.
Michael's been
on
since the beginning. He's been a regular visitor for quite a while.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I actually had spoken with Megan Fox, who I guess is closely intertwined with him somehow. I spoke with Megan for about almost 2 years at this point. She's been involved in my case. She did some court watching. I was actually trying to get her on board to come to California because there are so many hundreds of thousands of cases all over the country. She wanted to try to pick a state. And I was gathering cases so she could come here and do some investigating. After her Missouri coverage. And that's how I found Michael, was through links with her. But I've never personally been engaged with him or spoken to him directly.
Okay. Well, you know, in fact, I've heard about Megan Fox for, I guess, a few years now. I haven't had her on the show. I'd love to. Michael's line just drops. He's back on the line right now. And that happens. If your call drops, just call back in and I'll get you on here. There's always technical things going on. So Michael, just from Action Radio's point of view, is a fabulous investigator, author, you know, has reported on many family issues and in particular cases, and also, you know, pretty much runs our Action Radio Family Law Project Facebook page. And so has done an amazing job there too. And so he is very well versed in these things. And so that's why I thought you guys had worked together long, but that's okay. It doesn't matter, you know, and so we can certainly catch up now. But your stories, I'm sad to say, are not unusual. I've heard stories like this for the whole time I've been on Block Talk Radio, which is over 4 years now. And so this is why I'm so concerned with getting these stories out and doing something about it. But I want to get into the activist mode, you know, the legislative mode. We need to start looking at solutions to this. And that's why I edited the bill a little bit that Michael wrote and see if we can get some more direction and focus on that. So, Michael, why don't you come in and tell your story for folks that might not know, and how you got involved with this and what you know about this current situation of moms actually being arrested. And that we're going to talk about parental alienation, because it does happen, but it's also being used as a weapon. It's like a red flag law, you know, where some perpetrator can take guns away from someone and then they end up killing them. You know, it's a similar kind of thing. Laws are being twisted and used very badly. So, Michael, let's get to you. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm an investigative journalist, and I write at michaelvolpe.substack.com. Parental alienation does not happen because no one can actually agree on what it is. Once someone figures out what parental alienation is, then I'll tell you if it's real. So let's start with that. It's one of the most bogus, ridiculous concepts anywhere, certainly in family court. It's propagated strictly by quacks. All quacks. I talked to a guy named Fred Davis, who's supposedly an expert in parental alienation. This is 4 or 5 years ago. And he told me 25 years before our conversation, he was developing real estate. So I guess you can go from developing real estate to being an expert in parental alienation. That's the kind of psychology that you have.
Yeah.
So the stories the women told are not unusual at all. The most notorious one that's similar to theirs is Sandra Gazzini-Recchi, which is the story that I covered more than any other. They did, in fact, try to arrest her with 4 rifles to her head, except her kids weren't with her when they arrested her. She doesn't like the term hide because they really weren't hidden. They were living with not a random family, but a family who would take them in. 2 of the 5 kids, I mean, when I say they, in her case, and it's the same thing. Her ex is physically, psychologically, every way abusive, stuck a gun to his son's head, all kinds of things. Her ex, David Recchi. The courts, the media, the police, Child Protective Services, the gun to the head incident is a CPS report that they said the son said, but obviously was never substantiated besides the victim saying it happened. I think there were 25 pages of CPS reports. There's hundreds of pages of police reports, other things. David's violent towards everyone. He's got a road rage incident. He's involved in a bar fight, threatened his neighbors, threatened his in-laws.
I want to just hold you up a little bit just so we can focus more on this case. You know, so I want to talk about our folks here. Yeah. Yeah.
She took off with the kids, and she was not protected in the same way that these ladies were not protected. And sometimes it's the man who is trying to protect the kids, and doesn't matter. The system makes money by doing what you're hearing. So if you want to fix it, you figure out a way to stop the system from making money in these situations.
Yeah, that is absolutely the key right there, and that's what I really want to focus on too. And I think when we talk about parental alienation, I think what most people think about is, especially, you know, I raised my daughter, you know, when you know, after divorce, and I was a weekend dad, and we had fabulous adventures, but I always wanted to make it a point not to say anything nasty about my ex, and hope that she would not say anything nasty about me to my daughter. Okay, so I think of what most people think of, and this is probably, and then I want to get to Lacey and Sarah's opinion on this. When most people hear parental alienation, they're thinking about the parent that has the child at that particular, or children at that particular time, complaining about their ex, whether it's the father or the mother. And so is that alienating? Well, yeah, but it's also alienating the kids from that particular parent who's saying those nasty things. So that, I think that's just a natural
thing.
I think
what
parents
most people
do a little
that's
bit of,
not what,
that's all right, then that's what I'm going. Okay, so hold on. This is where I'm going with it.
All right, wait,
Michael, I know where you're going to go with this, but let me just explain that that's what most people are thinking right now. It's like, well, you know, I don't want to talk badly.
Most people
now,
think of parental alienation.
Okay, but let's talk about the legal, now the way this is used as a weaponized
system.
It's not
system, a legal
that's what
term,
I'm into.
It's a psychological term.
Okay, but it's still being used
created
in family court.
By a guy named Richard Gardner who said women make up allegations of abuse, like Mia Farrow. He's a huge fan of Woody Allen. He said Woody was being alienated. The reason his daughter said she was sexually molested is not because she was sexually molested, but because Mia was putting the thoughts in her head.
Let me bring you back on to our folks here. How can we specifically help them? Let's talk about, tell me exactly how parental alienation is used, you know, as a bogus theory, real specifically, and then I want to get to Lacey and Sarah.
Okay, well, first of all, parental alienation is whatever each person wants it to be. You and I, on your old show, we interviewed a woman named Julie Goffstein. She was Orthodox Jewish. Her 6 kids were Orthodox Jewish. Her husband for a long time was Orthodox Jewish. He decided to be Christian. The rest of the family said, we're going to stay Jewish. He said, now I'm alienated. All right? Nobody was talking bad about him. He switched religions. The rest of the family didn't switch religions. He claimed that was alienating. It's whatever you want it to be. It's a psychological term. It's used in legal proceedings. It's not recognized by the American Psychological Association. It's not recognized.
Wait. Stop right there. Stop right there. No. So I'm going to get to let's go to Sarah and then Lacey. So if it's not recognized as a psychological term, how is it used in your cases? Who wants that one, Sarah or Lacey?
Yeah, I've just unmuted myself. You know, I think the concept of parental alienation was used as a weapon, as a claim with my ex, you know, saying that, you know, my departure or my fleeing the country was meant to alienate him from the children. And I made a very distinct point, you know, in my last conversation. So my point was never to alienate my ex from the children. In fact, I had gone through the family court system many times proposing that he get mental health therapy, anger management, that there was supervised custody, not at a visitation center. Those places are horrific. I wanted him to have supervised custody with an individual that we could both trust, something that was natural and normal. However, you know, Child Protective Services and the guardian ad litem, even though recognizing that the children were making reports of abuse, failed to act on it. In fact, I have a pretty disturbing report from the guardian ad litem where both of my children are reporting that dad is hitting them, dad's kicking them, dad's tackling them, dad's throwing them off the couch, dad kicked the cat so hard that he almost killed him. I mean, my children are saying, and the guardian ad litem is saying, the children are, I don't believe they're coached, I believe they're credible. And then the last line in her report is saying, I think the dad needs more time with the kids. Never do they err on the side of caution and say, you know, the children could have supervised custody, we should look more into this. They just, you know, of course, the guardian ad litem is being paid for by dad. And you know, of course, then he's saying when my children don't want to go with him because they're terrified, both of my children were refusing to go with their father, calling him that guy that hurts us. You know, my son was having nightmares, clinging to me, crying, having seriously regressive behavior. And I've got Child Protective Services standing over me. I'm sitting in a car and my son won't get out of it because he's terrified. And of course that was used to weaponize and say, well, she's alienating my children from me. And the whole goal, the whole objective was to say, hey, this situation isn't safe. I'm not trying to remove, you know, him from their lives. I'm just trying to make sure that their interaction with their father is safe.
Well, they make sure they're in your life.
And that's very different.
So Michael says that this is all about money. We've talked about this before, and he's absolutely right, that what we need to do is take
I couldn't agree with Michael more, yeah.
Yeah, we need to take the incentive out of that, and that's going to require some legislative changes, and that's what I want to get to in a little bit. I had to mute your lines again just because we got background noise. So like I say, if you're not talking, just mute your line. And we'll cancel background noise and everybody gets heard properly. But why do you think in your case, and I'm going to ask Lacey the same question, why do you think in your case that they did this? Do you think it was just to perpetuate the case? Do you think that, because they're obviously awarding, you know, kids to the wrong parent, and they're doing it intentionally, and they're doing it to perpetuate the case and make money, this we know. But how did they, you know, was anybody on your side in your case? Was anybody in the court on your side? Or was it just a dedicated whole case to this whole idea of you're the one who's alien? You know, it's like they're accusing the victim, you know.
Yeah, I had unfortunately, you know, a couple of central figures. And, you know, if you look at commonality, you know, at the time I'm going, who are these people and why are they doing this to my kids? You know, why aren't they listening? You start to feel crazy. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you go to the police. It doesn't matter how many times you talk to Child Protective Services. It doesn't matter how many times you go to court. You know, there are certainly financial incentives. He was paying for the guardian ad litem. There was a situation.
How was he allowed to do that?
That's the rule in the state of where my case takes place. So he was being paid, this very same guardian ad litem that, you know, took all these reports down from my children about being abused, saying they were credible. He was paying her bill. You know, in another situation, the very first child protective worker, he had written this 6.5-page letter, and I had put together, you know, what I call the binder of lies. I documented over 35 lies. Now, there were more, Greg. 35 instances of fabricating
stories about myself, about the children, that I could prove with medical records, documents. This Child Protective Service worker took this as fact. She refused to call me back. She refused to call witnesses that had seen him abusing the children. She refused to call my therapist and labeled me as a, as coaching that I had abused my kids by coaching my kids. And not only that, on Mother's Day of 2018, I was beat, strangled, and asphyxiated in front of my children. They were 5 feet away from me. And they, substantiated me and said that I abused my children that day because I forced them to watch my assault and battery. I mean,
so these people are irrational and insane. I don't want to shortchange
well,
the story
not only
at all.
That, she was sitting in the hearing, rubbing, my ex-husband's thigh, groping his inner thigh, and smiling and laughing in the middle of the court hearing. And I don't know if there was a sexual relationship. I don't know what the motive was there.
Can't
but
you
my
find out?
Sitting there.
Can't your lawyer find out? I mean, that seems to me that would be a disqualifier right there. Again, your case is amazing. Both you and Lacey, it's just unbelievable. But I really want to see if we can identify where the problems are. So where in your case, is it the judge, the guardian, the other attorney, everybody? Was anybody on your side? Is there anybody, how do you think this all came about? That it was just so one-sided and such an irrational decision.
My judge, Judge Moskowitz in Maine, has been under scrutiny. In fact, there was a large public outcry the last time he was reappointed as judge. The terrifying thing is this judge literally sits on the bench in not only family court, but also criminal court. So I have what they call judicial stalking. So this judge has taken all of my cases. In fact, at one of the hearings, he went on and on about how I was disgusting and that thinking of me keeps him awake at night, that he is, I'm just a disgusting human being. And he literally sat there and said how sorry he felt for my poor ex and how terrible it was that he had to deal with me. This judge has also been known. There's a woman, Lori Handerhan. Her daughter was raped by the father. There was DNA evidence inside the child. Lori has been not able to see her daughter in 8 years. Like myself, she is also banned from the state of Maine. So where I lived with my children, I was removed, and I am not legally ever allowed to enter the state. If I do, I will be arrested immediately and put in prison.
This is insane, and this is so insane. I just want to jump in. I want to get Lacey's story here because I want to really focus, and I will give you more time. If you want to do more time on your story, that's fine. What I really want to do today is see if we can start to work on some solutions. Where do we look? Where do we send the legislation? What kind of things are we going to be writing about? What can we do to alert other people to this? What groups do we need to bring in? And so that's really, like I say, you've got an incredible story. I'm not trying to diminish your story in any way, but I want to sort of focus in on where we can start to take some action about this. Let me bring Lacey back in the conversation. Oh, no, you're doing fine. Listen, I understand what you're talking about, and I could not imagine being in that position. Fortunately, as much as I didn't go along with my ex, we were both civil as far as our daughter was concerned, and that makes life so much easier. Lacey? Where do you think the problems are? Where do you think, in your case, where do we start looking, to fix this? Because you're in another part of the country, Yeah.
Well, what I think, what's doing my research, because I've been researching this, working my case every day
mm-hmm.
since
it
began in 2019. I think, honestly, I've been researching all the way back to the 80s when the parental alienation theory, it's a theory, came into play. And,
how did it come about?
It was
give me some background on that? Because, like I say, it's not just bad-mouthing your ex in front of the kids. That's what
right.
I still think that's what a lot
of
people think. But this is a weapon that's been from
it,
what
it
we
is.
Think of.
It was,
so
it was
tell me the
developed
difference.
By an individual. It was developed by an individual, which Michael said his name earlier.
Right.
It was in the 80s, and he actually wrote about and made the comment that he believes that there's a little pedophilia in everyone, which is awful and disgusting. And I don't know where somebody would ever come up with.
That means it's in him.
I don't know where that would ever come about. So this individual came up with this theory, as I believe, as a defense for molestation. And
oh, that's interesting.
That's where it began. And it was adapted by the courts like it was scientific information. And as Michael said, it's not. It's clearly not. And it has never been proven to be. How it's being used in the courts is beyond me. Typically, when we try to find fault, you know, we go by evidence and scientific information like DNA, things like that, right? So how mm-hmm. would we use a theory that has no scientific information to back it to rule these cases? Makes no sense. Absolutely no sense to me.
Do you think this is the major weapon that's being used against, you know, you good parents by bad parents to perpetuate the system, or are there other things involved? Because we might be able just to focus on this.
But here's the thing. I believe, because like I said, I went back all the way to the 80s when this began, and mm-hmm. I've met with lots of women. In specific, there's a lady, Mary Lee. Her story's out. She's been out since the 80s. It's 30 years and going, you know. In her case, same exact thing happened. Parental alienation was involved. Sexual abuse was going on. And her case is almost identical to mine, except for I think CPS was more involved in her case as far as taking the children, and they weren't involved in taking mine, my daughter. It was more the court just siding with the abuser. But what I did notice in my own research is back before parental alienation was a big deal and came about, it was like, I don't know exact numbers, so I'm just going to use some numbers. And I would say like the majority of cases that involve sexual abuse and abuse allegations, say it used to be like 90% were believed and 10% were false. Mm-hmm. Well, when this parental alienation came about, and they started using this in the courts, those numbers flipped. It went from the majority being believed to now the majority is false allegations and very few are believed.
Based on parental alienation theory.
Seen.
Interesting.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what I've
yeah.
seen through my research is that once parental alienation was adapted by the courts and started being used in the process of figuring out what is in the, you know, quote unquote, best interest of the child, because that's what they mm-hmm. claim the family court does.
Oh, please.
This is when those numbers
yeah.
changed. And
right.
I used to think, like Sarah, that I was one in a million and I was very lonely going through this and it was awful until I started putting my story out there and reaching out and finding and doing all this research and actually getting a hold of the people in the articles that I was reading about. And then finding these groups of women, and there's thousands and thousands of women, not only in the U.S., but all over the world,
oh, yeah.
dealing with the same thing. And our stories are like they're so similar that it's eerie, and it has to be within the way that the process of the family court. I believe that it is, yes, monetary. I believe that they are, you know, obviously everyone involved in the family law court is making some kind of profit. Look at how much it costs to go, like, tell me this. Why is it in one part of, I can just say the state because I've done research, part of California,
mm-hmm.
let's just say Placerville, like in that area and in Placer County, a custody evaluation will be roughly 12 grand, okay? And that's just an estimate. But on the opposite side of the state, on the west coast of California, near Marin County, a custody evaluation is $80,000 to $100,000. Why is it that they get to go and change the amount that drastic just because of the income and how much, you know,
well, you just proved this is a money-based, it's a moneymaker. This is what this is all about.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to bring Michael back in just a second here, but this is where I think it's like the theory is used to make money and they're all in on it. But the more dangerous question, no, I agree with you. Yeah. The more dangerous question is the pedophilia movement in this country using recruiting, or are these members of this particular group? Is there, you know, a pedophilia component to this,
well,
where these folks are somehow involved or not?
I
hope not.
I totally believe that. I believe that they're trying to normalize sexual abuse, for sure, because not only did the supervised visitation facility and the reunification counselor, but all of these people involved in my daughter's case kept telling her that we know that she would articulate the abuse to them, say, in detail, this is what happened to me. And they would reply with, well, we know that's what your mommy says, but your daddy hasn't done any of this since you've been coming here. Well, yeah, he's in a supervised visitation facility. So your daddy's a good daddy, and they kept pushing this. Even the officers that interviewed my daughter told her that not one parent's better than the other, even after she talked about the abuse in detail. How can that's coaching? That is the very thing that they are saying and
no, that's
claiming
psychological
that
warfare.
We are doing.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how can
and,
you tell a
yeah.
child who is crying out with pleas of, this is what happened to me, oh, your daddy's a great daddy? Like, that's trying to push the agenda that sexual abuse is okay.
Yeah. This is like in schools
where
they try and change the gender of kids, you know, when they say that the boys are girls and the girls are boys, and we have the hormones and surgery to change you. You know,
right.
Without telling the parents. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Let me get Michael back in here, because I want to ask specifically about the money aspect, the pedophilia aspect, and things that you have turned up, and the fact that is this like the psychology, you know, the brainwashing, the normalizing of abuse, you know, just like they're trying to normalize the fact that no kid has a gender, you know, that can be changed. Michael, we've got a lot to talk about on this.
Right. The psychologist, if you will, who started this, his name is Richard Gardner, killed himself apparently by stabbing himself 4 times in the chest, in the stomach, and then 3 times in the neck. Apparently that's how he killed himself. As far as changing the system, you should, as I put on your website with the Elaine Dabrowski Act, you should just abolish all Garden at Lightham, all of these other people, because they are the ones making money on it. Just make it illegal for courts to appoint any of these third parties and see what happens. And a lot less people will be accused of parental alienation and won't be propagated through the courts. As far as the pedophilia aspect, Gardner had all sorts of statements. They were all self-published books, so people didn't notice him until he died. But yeah, he was at minimum a supporter of pedophiles, if not a pedophile himself. And I don't know about the larger aspect of it, but pedophiles use it all the time. Woody Allen is just the most famous one. I found 3 cases in St. Louis County where suspected pedophilia against a child. And what was the defense every single time? What was the defense? Parental alienation. I think Lori's story for Making Divorce Pay, which is an article I wrote in 2015. Unless I'm wrong, she was accused of parental alienation. I know that her attorney told her not to bring up the abuse because that's the quickest way to lose custody.
And people do use false accusations. I've heard, you know, child molestation is a regular false accusation, you know, and just like, you know, parental alienation is a bogus theory. So we know what goes on in courts.
Right.
There are vindictive people. Mm-hmm. There are bad parties involved. But we need to change the system. We need to make a better system so these things can't be abused. That's what I'm trying to do. And I've got the Elaine Podlowski Act. Let me just read it. It's really short. In the state of Missouri, all custody matters shall be decided by only the judge, the 2 parents, their attorneys, and any witnesses and other evidence either of the 2 parties may introduce. The court shall not appoint a guardian ad litem, custody evaluator, or any other third party. All cases shall be decided within 18 months of filing, and all legal fees shall be capped at no more than $30,000. I'm not sure how you do the last part, but I think if you get the guardian ad litems out and some of the, you know, the other things you mentioned, mm-hmm. just limit the parties involved, I think you're onto something. Let me check
right.
with Sarah and Lacey also on that. Let's go. Sarah, I don't know if you've read this. It's a very short bill. I just read the whole thing. Is that something that makes sense? Would you approve of that kind of a change to the system?
Yeah, I think one of the problems is the financial, you know, repercussions for appointing some of these so-called professionals. The court selects, the court appoints, the court, you know, pays their bill, or, you know, the abuser in some cases, you know, it may be responsible. You know, the other thing, just in terms of guardian ad litem, judges, mm-hmm. they lack training. They don't have any real training, any real experience, and any real background in dealing with domestic abuse, rape, incest. I mean, the problem is that they're making decisions, you know, for large groups and cohorts of people based yep. on things they have no formal training in. So, yes, they may have legal experience or some understanding of the law, or I think in my judge's, you know, case, he could care less about the law and more about the point he's trying to make and punishing, you know, the parent for, you know, not following an order or, you know, protecting their kids. But, yeah, I mean, I think – you know, if the court is going to require something, there should be, you know, some sort of cap or fund that is, the court is required. If you're going to force us to go through, you know, in my case, I was forced to go to a court-appointed, you know, psychologist. And, of course, later those records were denied because they did not produce the outcome that the court had wanted. So, you know, they had a yeah. And so those records were sealed. I've been fighting for those records for years. Those same records, you know, they were hoping that the psychologist would deem that I was an unfit parent, that I was crazy, that I was making up these allegations, coaching the kids, blah, blah, blah. And in fact, you know, I have had one lawyer who was able to review those documents under lock and key in the court. But I've never even been given granted access to my own psych evaluation. I can understand by HIPAA why, you know, I couldn't access his. His evaluation was pretty loathsome.
Well,
you know,
unless
it
pertains
really
to the court, if they're awarding child custody, you know, why would it make sense that you couldn't evaluate on what basis they awarded child custody? I think you should be able to look into that. I don't think HIPAA applies.
Well,
not to mention
the dynamic of the alleged domestic abuse and his evaluation, you know, would validate the fact that the therapist, the psychologist believed that he had no regard for the law, that he intentionally provoked an emotional response out of people, you know, that he really just, you know, she said that she didn't know if he lacked in empathy, which I would agree with, or that he just didn't, you know, care. And so certainly, you know, when we're looking at records, as Lacey has mentioned, you know, a few times, they deny us any record that will go against the narrative they've created
mm-hmm.
for us.
Yeah. We call
know,
that a star chamber. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a Stalinist. So, yeah. Let me just hold you up for a bit because I've got your bill here. And then I want to get to Lacey and back to Nicole. And what I want to do now that I think about it is we have a couple of bills. I think I wrote one on the psychological qualifications for judges to even serve in family court. So I want to get you all our family bills and put them in one place so you guys can take a look at it and see what you want to do with it. But this is called the Protective Parent Sentencing Bill. It was the first time I ever posted a bill while I was on the air. That was an interesting experience. You said requires sentencing court to review records and expert testimony as mitigation evidence. Defendant and or defendant's children were subjected to domestic abuse, that it was a significant factor in criminal behavior, such as departure from the family residence, provides that such evidence constitutes substantial and compelling reasons justifying downward departure sentence, such as a misdemeanor, authorizes court to impose lesser sentence, even set if sentence is mandatory and otherwise required by the law. Okay, so we're going to work on the language on that a little bit. Because I was, you know, but that's okay. Everything can be amended. But what are you trying to say with this? What's your goal here?
So in my case, Lacey's, and you know, many other cases like ours, we have been charged because we fled a domestic abuse situation in efforts mm-hmm. to protect our child. And I mentioned before, you know, even a common citizen has the right, you know, let's say you, somebody is having a heart attack and you do CPR and you crack someone's rib. Even as a Samaritan, a Samaritan has, you know, a random stranger has more rights, you know, to protect, to save. They saved a life than, you know, a protective parent does. So in our situations, we fled to protect our children, not out of spite, not out of, you know, we were trying to alienate our children. We fled to keep them safe, and that's the only reason. There needs to be an understanding in the domestic violence world. There needs to be some understanding that if the action that you are pursuing is done in the effort to protect someone, whether that be your elderly grandmother, they're being abused in a nursing home, your child, your stepchild, there needs to be some, and under a lot of the law, you know, if your child's charged with a felony, then here's your sentence. So in my case, I've been charged with two felonies, each facing up to 5 years in prison. So I could be facing 10 years in prison. But I did it to protect my
Here's what I want you to look, though. Here's what I want you to look. Yeah. Look at the self-defense provisions. Look and then criminal law. I want you to go to criminal law, and I want you to do a little bit of research on self-defense. You know, we have the Castle Doctrine, you know, the stand your ground thing, things like that. So I want to see if there's a defense principle of parents defending their children that you could apply to the family law court, family law cases,
There are multiple laws, and there's multiple articles about defenses in, you know, child abduction, alleged, you know, child abduction cases. You know, certainly one is the law of necessity, which mm-hmm. does cover this, but it doesn't cover the sentencing of that parent. And so we're looking at several cases that were recently settled in criminal court by mothers in particular who had fled. And so that, you know, one mother, her, you know, sentence was reduced just down to one felony from five felonies. And I'm saying, why is this parent getting a felony charge to begin with in the sentencing aspect of this case when, you know, what she did was an effort to protect her child?
Well, see if you can bridge that gap then from where the law is and where the law should be. And see if you can incorporate this in them, and that's what we do here. And so what I intend to do is propose a series of family law bills to our family law Facebook page to get some more comments, to folks that you know, groups that you know, people that you know, Michael to write about, talk about, and investigate and help us with too. And all these different things are going to kind of come into play. So let's see if we can get something, you know, pretty productive as far as that goes. But I think self-defense is one place to start looking. Lacey. What can you add to us here as far as getting rid of this bogus theory and empowering the good people, you know, they're trying to save their kids?
Well, I think I spoke about this last time we were on air, but I believe that part of changing the way they deal with custody, I think they should have juries that participate in the custody. I think, by having a handful of court-appointed people look at this who are getting financial advantage isn't fair. You know, they should have a jury that looks and decides and looks at all the evidence of where the child should be and what mm-hmm. Custody should occur.
Well, that's itself right there. If you want to do that, or you know, we can all kind of chip in and do that. But I think requiring juries, in other words, or you could expand it a little bit. This is the personnel that shall be involved in family court. We're not going to have guardians. We're not going to have all this psychological stuff. We're not going to have child protective services unless they're actually protecting the child. And I don't know how to word all this yet, but I think requiring a jury at least in the final, before anything is awarded or decided. You know, if it's just a hearing, if it's just evidence, if they're just, you know, like a preliminary kind of thing, no. But before anything is decided, it has to go before a jury. I think that alone is a bill
Absolutely.
That would be huge. Okay.
Well,
so,
if they don't want to allow cameras, because these are minors, they don't want to allow cameras, they don't want to allow it to be open to the public, then mm-hmm. they need to have juries be participating in these kind of cases.
Well, what about cameras when the minors aren't in court? What about the public when the kids aren't there? So let's include that too in the jury options.
Well, I just feel like this needs to be more. I think they've closed it, the family court. They've closed it down so that they can keep their narrative and they can continue their agenda. This is why these children are being put with their abuser over and over and over again. And this is why these children are ending up murdered or further abused. You know, how many cases have we heard over and over and over again? It's devastating to even look at Facebook because every day I see another story of another child being fatally injured by their parent who the court awarded custody.
This is an epidemic.
Horrific.
This is a massive problem. This is why we need to do something. So, which brings us back to Michael.
It's a crisis,
Michael,
definitely.
Oh, God. Michael wrote a bill basically bringing this under the racketeering laws, bringing family court under racketeering. I thought the bill was a little too big and complex, so I took a bunch of stuff out of it. Michael, can you focus that bill more? Can you go into the law specifically where you want to make changes? You know, the only definition we really need is why the courts are what RICO is, you know, what is racketeering, and how the family courts are a RICO organization, and then let's start changing some specific laws without detail that we don't need. Yeah, go ahead.
You're not really understanding the law. That's number one. Number two,
okay.
Training. There's a law being proposed in California called Pekin's Law that would require judges and others involved in family law matters to participate in regular training on domestic violence and child abuse in its many forms. Training is nonsense. If the judges aren't well-trained, they shouldn't be judges. So
okay.
Anybody, if you're proposing training, all you're doing is giving the trainers a lot of money. You're either naive or you're corrupt. I'm going to assume the people here are naive. But training does nothing. Zero. If the judge isn't well-trained and they shouldn't be on the bench, then the problem is the way we're choosing judges. As far as the racketeering bill, I modeled it after RICO, which is racketeering influence corrupt organizations. Racketeering is a catch-all concept in the original RICO that describes a variety of crimes that organized criminals engage in. In my bill, it is a variety of legal things that corrupt people do to fix cases. It was a case-fixing bill. It's not supposed to add to anything. It stands alone as a national bill to say there's a lot of case fixing. Here are some of the techniques. If you can prove that any one person engaged in at least two of them,
mm-hmm.
then you can charge them under my law, in a, similar to the way that the original RICO works. But it's not about defining racketeering. Racketeering's long been defined, and also my bill is that it's just modeled after the original RICO, which is why I called it racketeering.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million things that people do. They withhold evidence, they suborn perjury, they commit perjury, they illegally arrest and jail people, and they do this to fix cases. So this was a bill to attack that. And
yeah, I want
to.
Your premise is right, and I think you're on the right track. I just want to focus it more. So, in other words, you know, you need a section that says the following shall not be illegal. You know, case fixing, guardium ad litem, you know, things like. I've forgotten exactly
that
how you just phrased it.
That section is in the bill. It's been in the bill for 4 years. I think there were 20 different things.
Look at it from the point of view that's not
an. The original legal has predicate acts. Mine is the same way, predicate acts. I modeled my bill after the original RICO. So everything, in terms of style, everything that's in the original RICO is in my bill because I modeled it after it.
But I want to make it easily understandable and accessible for us folks that aren't as well-versed in it. That's what I'm trying to do. See, the whole point, we don't have to write laws like other laws are written.
It was easily understandable 4 years ago. Apparently, even though none of the words have changed, now you're saying it's not easily understandable.
No, I said it then, too.
I've explained
it.
Do
you have any comments around that bill? There's an amazing amount of
there's
of
a
stuff
few comments
on
the bill. But we
tons.
Worked it out 4 years ago. I'm not sure exactly what you want me to do on it now. But like I said, the idea is that these cases are fixed, like the cases you've heard about today, like the Ruckey case. They're all fixed, meaning they already had their mind made up before anyone stepped into the courtroom, before one piece of evidence was heard. So how do you prove it? There are all of these different predicate acts with the original RICO. It's things like forgery, bribery, murders is one of the predicate acts. John Gotti was tried for murder and other things under the original RICO. And so you prove that the person, whoever, the judge, the guardian ad litem, the lawyer, whoever it is, was involved in this scheme, and you prove at least two different predicate acts, an act of perjury, an act of forgery, whatever it might be, and then you have to prove that the trial was fixed. And once you prove that, then the person would be convicted under my bill.
Well, let's ask Lacey and Sarah about that. Lacey? You have, in fact, you guys are probably, we only have about 5 minutes left. If you guys have questions for Michael, that would be a great time to do it.
Yeah, I actually have a question regarding what he just stated. So I have 100% proof that all of these people involved in my case committed perjury. But also in the state of California, there's very specific laws on and protections over these people for them committing perjury. Which, so how do you hold them accountable for what they've done?
Well, you make it a federal bill and you have the FBI investigate it. But I can't, you know, so RICO itself is a federal law. There's actually state laws, too, that are modeled after it. But that's why you hand it to the feds and you hope that they would actually investigate it. Though most of the time they don't. But the FBI loves RICO. They throw everyone under RICO.
Well, to speak on that, I honestly reached out to the FBI when I was actually a wanted person.
You and thousands of other people have reached out to the FBI.
I actually provided them a thumb drive with all of my evidence showing and proving that each individual that was involved in this
you
case
and
committed
a thousand
perjury.
Other people. I know lots of people reach out to the FBI. They have no appetite for this. And maybe it's because there's not a specific law for it. FBI didn't really go after organized crime until RICO was passed, and now that, you know, they've destroyed the mafia. So maybe what's necessary is the legislation that they could use to try all of these people. The FBI doesn't believe that any of this is criminal. They don't even look to see if there's any bribery going on. They don't care about the perjury, obstruction of justice. They don't care about any of that. They don't care that those are clearly crimes. So maybe what they need is a law that they could investigate people under. You know, RICO is 50 years old, and they love RICO. FBI loves to investigate people under RICO. The U.S. Attorney's Office loves to prosecute people under RICO. They prosecute almost everyone under RICO. So if you give them another law that they can use, maybe that's the trick. But you can't force law enforcement to do their job, no matter what law you pass.
That's been proven.
Sarah?
Yeah, you know, I actually looked at the RICO statute. I have a really fantastic lawyer who's been helping me in the civil arena, and we tried to pursue a number of different angles, and were really thwarted. You know, our evidence was thrown out. In my case, Maine is the only state in the United States that allows a civil action for perjury. And it's an unused statute. So at present, we are pursuing a charge, my ex and his sister, who were both involved in the conspiracy to beat, strangle, and asphyxiate me in front of my kids on Mother's Day, I'm sorry, which, you know, really resulted in things spiraling out of control and me being discredited in family court. I have been denied those records for years and been fighting. You know, I went from a victim to being accused of being the abuser when every police and paramedic report, strongly shows that that is not the case, that I was the victim and my children were the victims that day. But we have filed civil action perjury and conspiracy fraud charges because the state of Maine lacked a appropriate RICO statute. We're using this. And I think, you know, in other states, I think we do need to allow if the district attorney, if the FBI, if other agencies will not act when perjury is happening, when people are conspiring, when people are lying under oath, that as citizens, we are able to pursue an action to expose the truth. And I think that that would be one case that we could help is getting that civil perjury action to be extended to other states.
Right. Amber Heard lied under oath in front of billions of people. Let's see if she gets charged with perjury. I don't think you rarely see people get charged with perjury. But they do, when it's wrapped up into RICO, they get charged with perjury because that's what they refer to as a predicate act. Nobody ever gets charged with lying under oath. The feds don't care about that. They don't think perjury is a very significant crime, even though you're perverting the justice system. But
unless you're lying to them, But in which case, you can go to
right,
jail.
Right, but they have charged perjury as a predicate act and used it to prove RICO. Because, like I said, the feds love RICO because the punishment is significant. It's a hammer to get people to cooperate, and it's relatively easy to prove when you consider the seriousness of the crimes. They absolutely love it. They could love this, too, if it was ever passed. But getting somebody to be charged with perjury is a tall task. I don't think Amber Heard will be charged, and her lie was in front of billions. So
yeah, but the real perjury, the real perjury
well,
of the officials,
right.
though.
Multiple.
That's
multiple.
The problem. We got a minute
left,
folks.
I think the difference is...
Go ahead.
I want to speak. I think the difference is the current perjury statute only allows a district attorney to charge with perjury or the FBI. The statute I'm using allows a civilian to go after, perjury charges under the civil arena. And so my ex and his sister have been charged. They have been served by the sheriff, and that will be going to a jury trial in Superior Court in Maine.
So you need that as a model law. See, a lot of times we don't have to write the laws ourselves. If there are good ones existing, you know, in your state, then they would be just as good in other states. And so this is something
exactly.
that we can, yeah. So let's use that as a model. All right, we've got about 30 seconds left. Thank you all. We're going to do this again, but I think we've got some areas to look at, and I'm going to share all the bills that we have family law related. And what I want to do is give them to you guys and then see where you want to go, what kind of improvements we can make to put them in shape to actually get out to the public, both at the local, state, and national level. Lacey, you got about 10 seconds. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a question. So if perjury is not a big deal and they're not holding people accountable for this, why do we swear people in under oath? What is
no,
the point of doing that?
Yeah. Well,
why do
no,
you
like I said, they only care if you lie to them. They don't care if you lie to each other. they just care if you lie to the feds, care if you lie to the feds. Yeah. No, perjury, I would look into that. I mean, you got some serious things to look into here. Civil perjury, I think, is a fascinating thing to look into. We've got to take the money out. We've got to get this, we've got to make some kind of a statute that you cannot use bogus theories like parental alienation that have not been even, you know, registered with the American Psychiatric Association, wherever it was. I mean, all the things, you just go over the podcast today and just make a list. Say that again.
And written by a pedophile himself?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's projection. I think he was just projecting his own pedophilia onto everybody else and using that as an excuse to perpetuate and create a system where everybody could do it. So anyway, I'm not sorry he's
Absolutely.
Gone. All right. That's it for today, folks. The clock stopped
Thank
a,
you,
a little bit ago.
Thank you, guys.
Greg,
Sarah,
you're
welcome.
Michael. Thank you all.
Yeah. Thank you both very much.
Have
all right.
Day.
Yep. And we'll do this again. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com.
Right,
you're very welcome. Bye now. Oh, I'm so good. See you. Goodbye. All right, there we go.
Bye, guys.
All right, we're so organized here. Can you tell? Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website where we're getting all these bills from is www.writeyourlaws.com. WriteYourLaws. It does have a search engine. You can find these bills relatively easily. And I'll be back tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow's the world's greatest doctors panel. Micah Bitz, Thorpe, Artis, Marble, and our expert data person, John Cullen. And that'll be at 10 o'clock in the morning Central Time, so a little bit later, just so our West Coast folks can have their coffee before they have to expound brilliantly as they do. And we'll do it again tomorrow. Thank you very much.